Shazam, bitches. Yes, we're back 4 days in a row this week. That's how crazy we're living out here on the West Coast. Holla. I just made it an East Coast, West Coast thing. The Joe Rogan Experience podcast is brought to you by the Fleshlight. There's no different way to do this. I've done it every possible way.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. What is a Fleshlight, Joe?
Have you used your Fleshlight lately?
No, I have not.
I actually reused it yesterday.
Really?
I was watching my girlfriend on camera.
Whoa.
Fucking another girl. Ew. And I used my Fleshlight while I watched
bro,
it.
Bro, buddy. Just get a little personal with the whole rest of the world right there. There's a lot of people that they're not comfortable with someone that they think is their friend, like little Brian Redband. Telling them about fucking and watching things.
Have you ever done one of those webcam shows?
You're like a moral degenerate. You're like, you're bad for society.
Have you ever seen one of those webcam shows?
Yes, I have.
It's pretty cool.
Somebody sent me to a link the other day that was, he goes, what the fuck, the mother load? And I go to the link and it's this some crazy cam site where it's all girls that are topless that are like playing with themselves.
Yeah.
And it's all free.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like you can. There's the one I use is StreamMate, and you can go to and just have a conversation for the girl while she's like sitting there topless, and then she's like, "You want to go in a private room for $10?" And then you do whatever you want to in the private room. And but
this was all virtual.
No, yeah, like this is like webcams and stuff. And so, but there were so many old ladies and fetishes that was just creepy to look at, like at an old lady. Like there was like an old lady that was like maybe 75 years old.
Let's get through these commercials so we can talk about
this.
I want to hear about this. I want to hear about this. But let's get through these stupid commercials, because that sounds too good to just be.
Well, the adult industry has always been pioneers of new technology, whether it was like home video, you know, and then like on the internet. I mean, they've always been the first. And when we have virtual reality, I bet virtual sex will be pioneering it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, we're gonna get to that. But let's get this out of the way. Fleshlight sponsor joerogan.net. Enter in code name Rogan, get 15% off. It's a solid product. It's the best fake vagina out there. It really is way better than masturbating. Mm-hmm. There. We're also brought to you by Onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T, makers of Alpha Brain, the cognitive enhancing supplement that I use. I didn't take one this morning, so let's see if I stumble. If I stumble through my words today.
I don't have any more. You took all mine.
Dude, I gave you some. Didn't I give you some of the new stuff?
No.
No. Yeah, I got some new stuff for you.
I need to get back on it.
Get on it. O-N-N-I-T.
Get up on it.
If you can, what is this shit? What is it? What are you talking about? We're talking about nootropics. And what nootropics are, they're vitamins that are designed to enhance the function of your mind, the way your thinking works. And they work. They work.
They're only going to get better.
Yeah. Do you try stuff? What do you do?
I have not, but I'm a, you know, David Pierce wrote The Hedonistic Imperative, talks about, you know, how nanotechnology eventually is going to be used to, like, design vaster and more broader versions of human intelligence. And I'm sort of all about tinkering with ourselves in order to sort of improve ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
We're the ultimate art project is us, right? So it's kind of like, why not?
I got to get you some of this just to see if you like it. I have some people that I've gotten that are completely addicted to it. It's fascinating stuff. I like it. Some people, the most important thing about this product, I should say, is that we have, for the first order, for your first 30 pills, there's a money-back guarantee, 100%. You don't have to send the product back. All you have to do is say, you know what, this stuff didn't work for me. And you get 100% of your money back. We're way more concerned with having people feel like they're not ripped off than with making money. So check out the stuff. It's all at Onnit.com. We have sports-related supplements, immunity-related supplements. We have New Mood, which is a 5-HTP supplement, which boosts your serotonin, actually makes you feel happier. It's great stuff. It's all healthy for you. It's all explained online as a frequently asked questions. You can go into it in depth and Google nootropics and try out all the different stuff that's out there and just check it out. But go to Onnit.com if you're interested, and under Alpha Brain, enter in the code name Rogan, and you get 10% off. Not just the first order, but every order. All right, bitches, Jason Silva's back. He's slinging.
Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night, all day.
Jason Silva, come back to sling more cosmic dick. You said we're cosmic revolutionaries. I say you're a cosmic dick swinger. How about that?
Wow. Well, thank you for having me back, dude. Last time was so fun. Oh, thanks, man.
It was so fun.
I had a great time, too. And just a shout out to all these amazingly engaged listeners and followers, dude, that the response was so positive and so
we have a really
delightfully positive,
super positive group of people that follow the show, and it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah,
how do you do that? I mean, how does that ever happen? I don't know, but
it's because of your authenticity, man.
Well, honestly. I'm honored if that's what it is. Yeah. Whatever it is, I'm honored.
It comes across, man.
When we go to clubs, that's the thing that the waitresses are always saying, that our crowds are so nice and that they tip really well, and it just makes you feel so good. It's like the biggest feeling of accomplishment that I've ever had is someone who listened to the show once and said, your show makes me want to try to be a better person.
This is the kind of feedback that we've been getting about our mind meld, dude. Yeah. It's been insane. Like, some people have created these remix videos where they've taken highlights and sound samples from what we talked about, set them to imagery and set them to music. Yeah. And that's kind of like what the creativity and the whole remix culture is all about. It's not about where you take things from. It's where you take them to.
Yeah, yeah.
And you
yeah.
see that. It's just like, oh, my God. It's
There's a
it's
bunch of those inspired. Out there now. There's so many guys that are really good at that too. There's so much creativity.
Oh, yeah,
and
so
most of them have like regular jobs. They're just like regular dudes.
So
like,
they're doing it out of pure passion.
Yeah, like there's a kid who calls himself the Paradigm Shift on YouTube, and I met him, and you know he's just a really fucking talented guy.
Amazing.
And he made this thing for me, the American War Machine, and I mean it's like it's humbling.
Yeah,
you know, it's humbling because you hear the words that you say, and they kind of the words seem just kind of obvious to you, the things that you've thought of and said 100 times.
Right.
But then when this kid puts it to images and video and music,
and then you
like,
see the power of an idea, the power of an idea to live on beyond its inception, beyond the moment that it came out of your mouth. Like, there was this guy, the Thinking Primate is the YouTube name, and they did a remix of us, and I thought it was glorious. Honestly, I thought it was glorious.
Yeah, there's a lot of those guys out there, and yeah, we're super honored that they do that. It's one of the coolest things of all time.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing going on right now, man. I think the internet has kind of ushered in a whole new culture. I really do believe that. You can't get by on bullshit anymore.
Yeah, it seems like a culture of massive collaboration and cooperation.
Yeah.
I mean, even that recent example of that viral video that they made about Joseph Kony in Africa, it reached 100 million views in a week, you know, and I think that just what it shows between that and also the anti-SOPA movement online, I think that what it's really demonstrating is just the ability to create viral swells that have massive impact without having used like mainstream media, for example.
Yeah.
You know, just make a video, put it on YouTube for free, and have a voice in the national conversation.
Yeah.
Like, everybody can do that, and the price points keep going down and down and down exponentially. And there's no reason not to think, oh my God, what comes next, right?
Well, this guy, I don't know the whole story on the guy who orchestrated the whole Kony campaign. And I've seen some criticisms about him, but it didn't really make much sense to me. I mean, it seems like this guy really is a war criminal. And what this guy's doing by exposing that, it's like, yeah, we're exposing a guy who's done some terrible, horrible things.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Unquestionably,
I just think the success of the campaign,
it's amazing.
Game-changing viral success. Yeah. Also is going to invite scrutiny that comes with that. So
yes,
I think whatever the controversy is, that's a whole separate conversation. I think the real conversation is, you know, people, democracy, social movements, revolutions, take note.
Right.
This is how you join the conversation. This is how you get your voice heard.
Right.
No need to like take up arms. No need to be violent. Like, you want to get something heard, you know, have a good video editor and a good sense of aesthetic presentation.
Yeah, no shit, huh?
It's kind of amazing.
Isn't that you know, I saw the tweets. They started coming in, you know, this Kony. And I knew who the guy was. I'd read about his movement in Africa.
Yeah.
And you saw Peter Pan.
Which is about Peter Pan?
It's all exactly the same as Kony.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't the Peter Pan used to steal the kids and make them like an army? And
isn't it horrible, though, that actually is happening? That someone, they're stealing children and forcing them to become soldiers? I mean, it's just terrifying stuff.
Yeah.
It's really, really horrifying stuff.
Yeah, no, it's terrible, but I do think that, you know, we're seeing violence is going down across the world. I mean, this guy, Steve Pinker, and he has the TED Talk, The Myth of Violence. We might have mentioned it last time. We'll say that violence is down across the world, and the chances of a man dying at the hands of another man are the lowest than they've ever been. Now, granted, there's more people in the world than there were in the past, but proportionally, the violence is a lot less. And I think as these people, you know, the rising billion in certain parts of the world coming online, getting smartphones, joining the global conversation, all of a sudden can have their voices heard. And the first step to addressing a problem is, you know, making an awareness that the problem is there so that the importance of it can resonate with people. And so I think there's reason to, you know, be optimistic about even the worst of the worst.
I agree.
Getting
I think
less
we,
worse.
We automatically go pessimistic because things aren't perfect. You know, we look at it and we go, God, well, why is there so much fucked up shit in this world?
Yeah.
Why is there so much crime? Why is there so much violence? Why is there so much death? Why is war still here?
Yeah.
Why is corruption still here?
Right.
But what you don't realize if you really stop and think is like, this is the best it's ever been ever by a goddamn long shot.
Absolutely.
I was driving on the way over here today on the highway, and it was a nice day here in Pasadena. There was nobody on the highway. It was like easy traveling. It's nice and beautiful and sunny out. And I was thinking, how much it would have sucked to live just 500 years ago.
Oh, totally.
Just 500, a blip in time, like nothing. No cars, dude. Fucking horses. There's not even trails out here.
Yeah,
you know,
you need to see. There's a presentation by this guy called Hans Roebling. His website Gapminder. He does this thing where he shows all the nations across the world over time and how the indicators of quality of life and infant mortality rate and income and all these different things. He shows that all the countries of the world, even the worst of the worst, are rising. So the rising tide does lift everybody else, and it's unbelievable. And I think the reason that most people don't realize that things are always getting better is because of the amygdala. Peter Diamandis did a presentation about this at the TED conference just a week and a half ago, and he has his book called Abundance, and he'll explain that, you know, because our brains evolved in a time where we had to have fight or flight mode, the amygdala is always looking for danger, and it supersedes everything else. And so the media gives us danger because that's what we're drawn to. You know, if it bleeds, it leads, and we're always going to be paying attention to what's wrong, even right. when there's infinitely more things that are going right. And because the media wants to just get viewership, you know, the mainstream media will feed us what we want, which is to see all the horrible things that are happening across the world.
Right.
Although, eventually, that's actually going to be a good thing, because if we can see what's wrong, we'll try to address it and try to fix it. But even when we remedy 99% of the problems that exist today, our brains are still going to be seeing the new problems, because right. that's what the brain does. And so,
yeah, the amount of time from us running from jaguars to being a guy who steps into a jaguar and turns the key, that the amount of time is so small. The yeah. biology has never had a chance to catch up.
It does not. We There's have pretty no much way. The same brains yeah. as we did 100,000 years
yeah.
ago.
I mean, 100,000 years ago, kind of everyone is yeah. agreeing, unless yeah. you know, you really go extreme yeah. that there was no sophisticated culture, which is nothing. 100,000 years is nothing.
It's a blink.
What the fuck happened, man?
Language. We got
yeah.
into it last time.
Yeah, we did get into
it.
Language. You really believe that just made everything change because we could exchange information?
Yes. How well, did, because the moment that we invented, and this is where Terrence McKenna gets into, you know, gets Kurzweilian and Kevin Kelly-ish in his comments, is that he said that when we invented language, biological evolution stopped playing the key role because it was replaced by this, you know, cultural epigenetic type of evolution, right. which goes faster and faster and faster because it accrues knowledge and it builds on itself. And it's not limited by the hardware of the brain, which would take billions and billions of years to change, you know. And so this cultural thing, you know, all of a sudden, each brain became a neuron in a vaster global brain of accrued knowledge and intelligence that was bootstrapping on its own complexity, which is why over the last 100,000 years, it has been the cultural evolution has been accelerating exponentially. It manifested as technological evolution. But what's most interesting is that this telescopic nature of it gets faster and faster and faster. So over the last 100,000 years, yeah, crazy, but over the last 100 years even, it's yeah. gotten crazier than the last billion.
Well, they say that 1,000 years ago, no one could read silently.
Right. There you go.
They had to read by talking. They had to say the words. No one could read silently. And it was actually one of the ways that some guy, I don't remember, some religious figure, Thomas Aquinas, maybe it's him, not sure,
okay.
proved that he was a saint.
Because he could read
knowledge
silently.
Because he could read silently, and then he would recite it.
Amazing.
He would look at it, not say anything, look at the scripture, not obviously not reading because he wasn't speaking aloud.
Wow.
And then he would recite it.
Wow.
And that was his mastery of the scripture was unparalleled. It's because he could read silently. He was like the only guy.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that guy, though. It's like it's one of those other religious people that may or may not have ever really existed. Might not have been Thomas Aquinas. You know, I didn't ask Sam Harris if he believed it. Jesus was a real human.
That was in the Zeitgeist documentary, I remember.
Was
that
it?
They said that he probably never even existed. Well, because he shares all the same attributes as all these other gods and right. all these other cultures. They all right. die at the same age. They're all born at the same, like...
But isn't it also possible that it could have been just a real person, but they attached all these other attributes to him because of ancient mythology?
I suppose.
And it just if you look at it open, just completely open.
Right.
But I don't know if it was a real dude, but man, you want to talk about one guy just kind of dominating religion for like thousands of years, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, if he was...
Well, he became a meme.
If he was
It was no longer a person, man.
Yeah.
He became a meme, which, you know, in Richard Dawkins' book, The Selfish Gene, he says that there was this new replicator. You know, just like genes were the replicators. They could multiply and they could evolve over time. That there was a new replicator that was born above the biosphere, a new kingdom above the biosphere. And the denizens of this kingdom were ideas. And so he said ideas in the form of memes, they're like organisms. They've retained maintain the properties of organisms, even though they rise above the biosphere. They replicate, they complete each other, they mutate, they leap from brain to brain. Yeah. They compete. Yeah. They compete for attention, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes crazy. And, you know, James Gleick, who wrote the book The Information, says that the primary building block of reality might be information before matter itself. So he actually says it comes from bit, matter comes from information, and that information is really what's at the core of reality. And it's just an insane idea, and I'm endless. Because that goes back to the whole thing about the power to change the world. People, ideas, passions can change the world because ideas have done more than genes over the last 100 years.
Well, McKenna would always go on about the world being made of language.
Yes, which
and it's really hard to wrap your head around, man. That was a real mind fuck because
it was huge.
Not really, but wait a minute, because two people have to communicate in order to create something together.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, you're thinking about infrastructures and cities. That is all a factor of language.
Oh, yeah.
Without language, none of this would be there. It's just, it's so hard to wrap your head around that.
And I think that he was spot on. And I think that the reason that he was spot on is because when he says, okay, the world is made of language, what he's saying is we create a mental model of the world in order to understand the world, in order to speak about the world and react to the world. We create a mental model in our head and then we label those pictures in our heads, you know, symbolically. So we abstractify reality. And therefore, the way that we interface reality is through the prism of our language, our thinking, our preconceptions, our stereotypes, our culture, which is to say we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are, which speaks exactly and directly to what I think McKenna was saying. Reality is made of language. It's almost like, it's why, like, they say that, like, even, like, thinking a happy thought will start to make you happier, you know? Right. Like, essentially, the world changes. You become happier about the world simply by thinking it so. And it sounds kind of, like, New Agey and stuff, but, like, not really, because even the object of description, I think, does something to influence one's perception of reality, which is just how you interpret electrical signals going through your brain anyway. And so if you're aware that reality is made of language and that we're like co-creating it with our intention, and something, of course, which is magnified with psychedelics, that's why they talk about set and setting being so integral to the trip, because your thoughts about the trip affect the trip itself. So thoughts become reality. But we should think of our lives as one big fucking trip. Our normal baseline waking sober lives is one big hero's journey. And it should be up to us to think of it so. And so if we're all on a hero's journey, if we're all on an extended lifelong mind manifesting, which means psychedelic trip, then we have a responsibility to sort of use words to map our reality the way that we want, to be authors of our reality, of our existence, to make a masterpiece out of life, one that we would willingly live again and again for all of eternity. So like what we're doing now, our conversation, it's changing the reality inside the synapses of those that are engaging with us, just the same way we're changing each other's reality right now. You know, this is a different reality than where we were an hour ago. We're literally interfacing in a different
universe. You don't think about it that way, though. You think, well, we're just doing a podcast.
Just a podcast.
Chilling here, talking shit.
Yes, but your portions of your mind, the output of your mind, whether it's immaterial or not, still creates tangible impact in the world. Because think of like,
especially like this,
the one or five or ten people that you might inspire to create some work of art that came out of what they heard in this conversation, and that work of art gets licensed by a brand to create a campaign for creativity that then the government of Finland adopts in their policy for education for the following year, and it transforms the lives of the next generation of students. The butterfly effect and transformation triggered by ideas is more powerful than, you know, I think, you know, than of the physical world.
I think you're absolutely right, especially in the age of the internet.
I think this is
the time where the ideas really can go viral almost instantaneously. Like this Kony video and this. I mean, I don't even think we've really fully examined the impact possible through information, especially with the what are kids going to be like, man? What are, you know, 20-year-old kids going to be like 20 years from now?
Oh, dude,
just growing up
infinitely more advanced and empowered.
Yeah, way more aware. Yeah. Way harder to bullshit.
Yeah,
you know, Bluetooth enabled kids.
Yeah,
I mean, they're just gonna be crazy.
They're gonna look back on the nonsense that we believe today, and they're gonna be laughing at us, man.
Yeah, I think even the way that, you know, how things are voted in, you know, how people resolve issues. I think the idea of having representatives, you know, over there to carry our voice to Washington is obsolete,
so
because we are post geographicals. Beings at this point. We don't need somebody else to represent us necessarily, because we can all represent ourselves and have a voice online. In fact, there's people that are talking about how, you know, we could reform or upgrade or re-examine like how government is run and how people are represented. I mean, I'm talking like a little farther out, but there's this guy who's starting this thing. He's a friend of mine. His name's Micah, and he used to actually be with Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and now he's doing this thing called Dynamic Democracy, which is about starting a conversation and exploring new ways of how the internet, the human extended nervous system that's connecting us all, right? Because we love saying that we are all connected, we are all empowered. Well, how about we upgrade the way the world is run, you know, like on a meta scale? Well, let's talk about it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that essentially is what the internet's doing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the internet, I mean, I've heard people be down on the internet, and I guess you could see some negative points to anonymity, and there's a few aspects of pornography that are a little unseemly. It's definitely accelerated pornography, I'll tell you that. Things have gotten really weird, man. If you want to look at like what happens to human beings when left alone to their own devices, and when allowed to expand in a contained market like pornography, there's only so many different things they can do. So they you know what the big thing is lately that I keep seeing, man, is girls getting guys to come in them and then they squirt it into a champagne glass and drink it. And you're like, really? Or a martini glass? Really?
Well, look, just because these digital tools extend the range of our creativity, it doesn't mean that people can't use that creativity in ways we don't agree with, or perhaps in bad ways, because just like we use the power of fire to cook our food, we use the power of fire to burn other people, which is always the double-edged sword of any expansion and extension of human reach. But that's still what evolution is probing for, because we're all seeking out complexity. It's just going from single-celled organisms to multicellular organism to beings to thinking beings to beings who create technology and so on and so forth. So it's all happening anyway. So people say it's not going to stop, it's part of evolution. But yes, we have to acknowledge that these tools are a double-edged sword, and that's fine. That's part of it, what makes the conversation interesting.
Or some people really like doing that. That's possible too, right?
There could
be a woman out there that actually likes to get dudes to shoot loads in her, and then she squirts them out into a glass. It is very possible. And who am I to judge, right?
You should never judge.
Shit that you like.
Hey, people can do whatever they want as long as they're not hurting anybody else.
Exactly.
It's
just weird that porn has accelerated to this, to what it is today. I mean, porn was not just porn for the longest time. You know, you'd heard rumors of like snuff films or something crazy, but no one ever saw one. Did you ever see a snuff film, Brian?
Yeah, I've seen snuff films.
Well, you've seen people die on the internet for real in real life.
Yeah, it's disturbing. But I don't even know if those are real half the time, though. Like, remember when Nine Inch Nails had a snuff film out called Broken? It was like they advertised it like as this bootleg video, and you'd rent it, and it looked like somebody murdering somebody else. It was kind of like Faces of Death.
Oh, wow.
And
that's terrible, man.
And everyone thought it was a snuff film, but
there have been real films, man, for real. There was a documentary on it a while back. And
that's terrible.
Yeah, and the guy who was the one of the people they were interviewing was talking about watching this film, and as he's talking about watching the film, he starts crying.
Wow,
it's pretty intense.
Wow.
Yeah, he's obviously pretty fucked up by it. You know, I mean, maybe he didn't cry. He definitely got choked up. He was like just thinking about watching this. Yeah, there's a broad spectrum of human behavior, man. We've got to figure out somehow to stop that.
Well,
is it necessary to have negative in order to influence positive? I mean,
I don't know if that's necessary. I think that was, you know, that has been something that perhaps has worked for some people. You know, to you got to know what bad is in order to know what good is. You know, you need the contrast, but it doesn't mean that we come up with some more novel solution that allows us to live. You know, because if according to that idea that we need the bad in order to know the good, it means that it implies that we need to have suffering to appreciate, you know, when we're not suffering. And I don't think that's
not
the case.
But if you look at things as being natural, you look at everything as being natural, like wolf behavior, bee behavior, look at all this stuff as being natural and positive towards whatever their goal is.
Right.
Whether their goal is to create this beehive that they create, whether their goal is to create an anthill. When you look at human society, maybe what we're doing is natural as well. And maybe we're so fucking chaotic and so crazy because you sort of have to be working with technology that's so far and ahead what your biology is capable of processing. Yeah. So we have this fucking wacky tribal monkey shit going on while we have nuclear power, while we have atom colliders.
There's a lot going on. Yeah. And, you know, increasingly people are moving into almost their own personal universes and soundscapes. And when we have virtual reality, then we each become the god in our own universe. And right. at that point, you know, an infinity of combinations and permutations of lifestyles will be explored by individuated nervous systems living out in the ether sphere of the interweb, you know. So who the fuck knows? But at that point, we won't care what that person does in their own virtual universe. Like,
the porn's gonna be awesome.
You think so?
It's gonna be grosser probably.
Grosser?
Yeah, like balut pawns, where it's like the tampon gets shoved in the vagina for a week and then pulled out and somebody eats it or something.
What?
Like
I hope not. I hope it actually becomes about like composing and creating the greatest dream we have ever dreamed.
Well,
I hope
maybe we use it could these be tools both.
To make greater art than we've ever experienced, to create better designer drugs that right. engage with our senses and make us appreciate art in ways that we couldn't have before, to merge with our lovers, to become one with them. I mean, we right. use language to connect and say how we feel to one another.
What if chicks want to merge all the time, man?
What if they want to merge
all
the time?
You got shit you want to do, man. What yeah. if you like you want to go hang out with your boys?
It's gonna you can't.
You want to go play pool?
And what if your boys want to
merge? And your boys want to merge with you and your wife? Ew.
You won't be playing pool though. You
what,
everyone's no,
what if
stay
your boy
house.
Wants to merge with your merge. Wife? He's like, hey man, can I merge with your wife?
Ew. Ew. That's weird.
I just want to see what it's like to be her.
What if they want
to
merge with your kids?
What if they can copy and paste your wife?
It's not sexual.
No. What if they want to merge with a dolphin because they want to know what it's like to be a dolphin?
Christ, Timothy Leary, settle the fuck down. Merging with dolphins and people. Yeah, what if, right? We have to define, like, once if we do create something that allows, like, the human consciousness to merge, mm-hmm, to interface mm-hmm. with something, we're going to have to, like, really define what's happening there so people don't, like
whether it's going to have parameters.
Sexual.
Interesting.
I just don't see. You can see, like, Nancy Grace on TV. Who is this man that he's merging with a 14-year-old girl in Florida?
That's ridiculous.
You tell me that's appropriate? That this man is merging. What does a grown man have in common with the thinking of a 14-year-old girl? She gets a little wetter every time there's a dead baby in Florida. Every time something happens in Florida, she's like, oh, yes, more programming. More material.
You know, I have to say the fact that we see so much.
Can't she find nice things? Can Nancy Grace, please? I love you. I'm picking on you because I have to. I'm a comedian. Can you just find one nice story?
Yeah, we need more programming that's uplifting.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it nice to see stuff that makes you feel good about humanity?
But it's also good to have people go after bad people. Don't get me wrong.
They're, no, I get
you know,
it.
Stopping crime and preventing scumbags from getting along. But absolutely, as far as like what we project, our issue is that there's 7 billion people on this planet. And if you only want to pay attention to negative shit, you can find enough to fill every second of every day. Every second of every day of every moment that you are on this planet, someone's getting jacked.
Yes, but
I think
the people are reacting to that by creating more and more really inspiring content. And I think corporations now are all wanting to align themselves with having a sort of positive impact on the world. You know, they're saying there's more to a corporation than just making money. How about wanting to make a social impact? But I think it is becoming part of our consciousness now. Increasingly, like, this is what you're hearing. I mean, you had Pepsi do that campaign last year, and they're all... They're realized.
My point was that you have to manage your own interaction with this kind of information. Mm. My point was that if you so choose, you can be around it all day, every day, or you can just not, and you can force yourself into more positive places.
Yes.
And the options available. Both options are available.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to be kind of careful in how you manage your consciousness, because you really can freak yourself the fuck out if you only chose to concentrate on all the negative things in this world.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
too much information.
Totally. No, and you could drown in information, especially because the new limited resources are attention. But I think it's interesting. Yeah. There's a book about this. It's called The Information Diet. And it says that it's really up to us to take responsibility over our information diet, to set up curators, to set up certain filters, to sort of, you know, to have a significant say in how we interface with media.
Yeah.
And we have that opportunity now that we didn't have before when it was just two channels. It was on or off. Mm. Now there's a billion options.
Right.
So curate, author, create an experience, an information diet that will keep you mentally invigorated, just
but,
like
you know,
a healthy food diet will keep you
a
healthy.
Lot of experimenting going on, too. You know, there's also a lot of people trying different things out and focusing on
yeah.
different things.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of misses that seemed like they were hits. Like, remember when everybody was into The Secret?
Yeah.
You remember that? And everybody was convinced that all you have to do is think positive and just draw a picture of the house you want on your wall, and one day it'll sort of manifest itself. And yes, Secret fans, yes, I'm paraphrasing
yeah,
that.
But don't you think that's an example, like the way you said it, is how probably a lot of people literalized the message without really thinking about it a little deeper and understanding how it might not sound like just... Bull.
Here's the problem with The Secret. Some of it's real. Okay.
Right.
There is a certain amount. It's one of the ingredients in making something happen. One of the ingredients is vision. It's 100%. There's one of the ingredients. I mean, you talk to anybody that had some sort of a great success, and a good percentage of them, at least. Some of them have sort of gotten their vision along the way, but a good percentage of them had a vision and followed it.
Right,
pushed
but
that, it and pursued
and it is
so
true.
That is true. But there's so much other shit involved. Education, hard work, discipline.
Right.
It's
and,
not
and,
as simple
and,
as
and
just
executing.
Thinking.
Because it's yes, like yes, everything so. Everything out in the world, everybody's, you know, the most magnificent artifact from the iPhone to the jet engine, you know, is actualized from a thought, from a dream, from a design, which means to say we constructed the virtual version before we constructed the actual version.
Right.
That's the same thing as visualizing something into being.
Mm-hmm.
But the into being part is when you say, okay, I'm going to go execute on this. I'm going to go like, the, you know, I'm going to move through space and time, move my atoms through space and time and go construct the thing and go lobby to build the thing, to build the dream, to actualize the goal. And I think maybe people who read the book without reading as deeply enough into it, what they thought it was like, okay, I'm just going to sit on the couch and dream something and it's going to come knocking on my door.
Well, it's also the problem is that they're dealing with a bunch of people who have had success. And when people have had success... And, you know, they all tell you the same story. Oh, I knew it was going to happen, and I dreamed it. Well, but that's because it happened.
Right.
You know, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, there's a lot of shit that comes along the way. You could have gotten in some random car accident.
Yes.
You could have got hit by a fucking meteor.
Absolutely.
I'm not exactly sure if 100% of your success is based on the fact that you focused on your dream.
Right.
I think it's a percentage of the success, but there's a lot of luck involved there, too, man.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
And to be
there's a lot of luck involved in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the fact that each of us is here, we beat out billions of sperms.
Yeah.
So we've already are all of us are living against the odds.
And the respect for luck, I think, is one of the reasons why people get lucky. A respect for luck. You know, you gotta respect luck. Is, you know, fortune, good fortune is unquestionably an ingredient. There's an ingredient in there. And I feel like if karma is real in any form, I believe that's where the most evidence of it being real is. That to me, the people that I know that are the most fortunate are also the kindest, are also the most generous. Those are the people that are the most fortunate.
Yeah, well, because if one's...
themselves as well,
which
is a very critical point. Yeah. When a lot of people mess up, they're super nice to other people, but they treat themselves like shit. They treat their body like shit.
Which is no good.
They don't go after their own goals. They don't chase their own dreams.
Right.
They let people abuse them because they're too nice. I mean, there's a lot of people that are not nice to themselves. You got to be as nice to yourself as you are to other people.
No, I totally
agree.
That
is a huge part of the equation that a lot of people miss out on. They're like, I'm a good person, I'm nice to people. Yeah, but you hate yourself. You know, you hate your body, you hate your mind, you hate the way you think.
Yeah, and you can do
not everybody.
You can do
not you.
You can do more for the world, I think, by treating yourself with the same kindness that you treat other people. And
sickness not to. It's a sickness.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
I mean, food is fucking delicious, but you shouldn't eat yourself to death. You know, I'm not saying you have to look like Kate Moss in her prime. Where did I put that reference from? Where was that? But you know, it's you don't have to, you know, you don't have to fucking eat yourself to death either.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people that eat themselves to death. Like the human mind can go terribly wrong. It can go on a horrible path and just get stuck there. Just get stuck in the mud.
Yeah. But the thing is, when we have that problem with software, you know, if software gets corrupted or if it gets a bad virus in it, you know, we can upgrade and reboot the system. And we're not so lucky
yet
with our biology.
Would you trust that? What if someone did something horrible, like there was a mall shooting or something, and some guy goes in the mall and just shoots random people,
okay,
and then you reboot him? Would you allow that guy? Do you think that's okay in a civilized society? society? Do you think we have to?
Oh, to reboot him?
To reboot him? And
well, that's a great philosophical question to ask. I mean, that's a different case study. I was.
Do we blame society on allowing him to get to a point where his software failed him? I mean, how do we approach that? If it's effective, if it's real, do we blame the tissue that's left after we remove his consciousness? Do we blame that tissue and say, "I'm sorry, this tissue has to die"? To make up for the 16 people you shot at the mall.
Who knows? Maybe there will be some form of like.
I bet there will be an ethical dilemma.
Like a virtual reality psychedelic experience where you take him down the rabbit hole and he has a Joseph Campbell-esque hero's journey and he collides with his own cosmic nakedness and then emerges rehabilitated. Maybe we'll have like.
It sounds like ayahuasca.
Digital download rehabilitation. Yeah, electronic ayahuasca. You said that. You tweeted once that that would be a way to. You should grab a criminal and you should put him in an ayahuasca session with a shaman to stare into the nakedness of his own soul.
Well, this is my next show that I'm working on. Nobody's bought it yet, but I've got some hopes. It's called Douchebags on Mushrooms. And that's the show. We take douchebags throughout the world and we just bring them somewhere and dose them up with like 5 grams of mushrooms and let them see themselves.
I mean,
nobody's
going to
die.
I think psychedelic therapy is so spot on, like in terms of the psychic readjustments that can happen in one session could take years of conventional therapy. Imagine giving it to people, giving it to criminals as part of a rehabilitation. That would be very interesting to explore. It just sounds very fascinating.
And not even just criminals, but people that have issues like alcoholism.
Oh, well, that's obvious. I mean, they just came out with a study just now that said that LSD could help people get over alcoholism in one session.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not to say about the
They were actually doing tests on this in the 60s. Mm. In the 1960s, they determined that 500 micrograms was enough to cure like more than 70% of chronic alcohol patients that came in and tried acid just from like looking at the situation just completely differently, being separated from the nonsense of what you're engaged in. Yeah. We get stuck in these weird patterns.
Oh, dude.
It's very strange. It's almost like a byproduct of our ability to focus on things.
Right.
We have this ability to become intense and obsessed and focus on things in a positive sense, but there's a byproduct of that, and that byproduct
side effect
is obsession.
It's a glitch.
Yeah.
It's a glitch.
Or it's
you get
stuck
in stuff.
It's a possible, you know, it's like if somebody gives you a fucking Ferrari, but you don't know how to drive a stick shift, and you sort of figure it out along the way, and you're jamming gears and fucking things up. Sometimes it's working well, and sometimes you don't understand how to use the system.
Yeah.
And it could be just that.
Yeah.
You know, when you see a kid that becomes obsessed with jerking off, you know, you get him into a sport. Maybe he become a fucking world champion. You know, maybe he's just one of those kids that just whatever he focuses on, he focuses on insanely.
Yeah. Like,
there's a lot of kids out there. I'm not saying you're wasting your life playing video games because video games are awesome.
Oh, they've improved one's brain.
But
there's been a bunch of studies about how gaming improves like coordination,
better
cooperation.
Driver,
but what I'm saying is that these kids, any kid that gets really good at a video game, you can get really good at anything.
Yeah.
You can get really good at if you put that kind of focus that you put to get fucking awesome at Call of Duty, you could really, you know, you could have a better life. You could
imagine
you're getting tricked by
gamification progresses where you can play these games to address real social challenges, and these gamers will probably find solutions to problems that engineers couldn't in the real world. That is happening more and more now.
Wow.
To use the resources of gamers to gamify a real world problem.
How does that work? Is it like virtual reality
game? They'll create like some interface and some problem, and there's like a game and you get points for solving issues related to the game.
Wow.
And some gamers discovered like some antibody for some crazy virus.
Yeah,
like people can Google this.
40-year-old
gamers solve some illness. Like crazy stuff. And you're going to be seeing that more and more. In fact, they did this crowdsourcing experiment about protein folding. And you know who the world's best protein folder is, who can fold and design proteins in the virtual space? Is like a woman who does it in her free time in the UK, and during the day she was like a receptionist or something. And
really?
She's the world's best protein folder. She used to do it on her computer at night. Yeah, it was
what?
Yeah, because you crowdsource what Clay Shirky calls the cognitive surplus. It's all this extra brain activity.
How is she protein folding? What is she doing?
It's some kind of crowdsource software thing that lets people like fold proteins, you know, and you can figure out how to do it in the virtual space, and then it can be applied in real life. And it turns out that the best one in the world was this woman in the UK.
With
better than all
job.
The scientists in the world. Yeah.
But she's just a lady with a regular
job. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're going to find that more and more. There's going to be some game. You know, in Budapest, who's going to fix world hunger? You know, like
look at like people like hackers, like hacking community.
Exactly.
Like these little 13-year-olds are hacking fucking Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they have a 13-year-old hacked the UFC.
Yeah, Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're badasses.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the Lulosec guy? Is that how you call it?
Lulosec. Yeah.
He ratted out like all these anonymous guys, like 26 anonymous guys. Ratted out everybody to the FBI just because, like, I guess the FBI was playing dirty and was like saying, "Hey, we're going to arrest you forever. You're never going to see your kids ever." You know? And the FBI actually admitted to it in an interview that that's what they use their kids against.
Huh. Oh man, what were they guilty of?
Hacking, you know, digital terrorism. You know,
they were like, they broke into some serious websites, right?
Yeah, I mean somebody said recently it's a higher form than terrorism.
Cyber terrorism rated higher than regular terrorism.
I have a good friend, this guy Mark Goodman. He's at Singularity University over in Silicon Valley, where they look at how these emerging technologies.
This is a Singularity University.
Oh hell yeah, dude! You need to go, man. I just did their executive program here in LA. It was at Fox Studios, and it was hosted by the head of Fox, the chairman Jim Giannopoulos, and it was the founder Peter Diamandis and Kurzweil. They have people from all over the world, like the most interesting, smart people, diplomats, actors, technologists, business people, to learn about exponentially emerging technologies and how they can be addressed to solve humanity's grand challenges. And you know, like the homework there, everybody that comes out has to come up with an idea that can help a billion people. Because the notion is that technology and our tools now allow individuals to know what to do, what at one time could only be done by governments, you know what I'm saying, or people with extreme resources. But yeah, Singularity University had an executive program, and they had talks about all the amazing stuff going on, but also this guy Mark Goodman talked about like cyber terrorism and new forms of obviously synthetic biology used in bad ways, and it's a conversation that needs to be had, because human beings have a good ability to foresee problems, and so we should start addressing those problems before they become a serious issue, so that we can enjoy all the fruits and benefits that are coming from these emerging technologies, but at the same time take responsibility for obviously what is a double-edged sword, as always.
Or the aliens land first before we get our shit together.
Right, well.
And then we got a problem.
Actually, we should talk about aliens. I have a fucking crazy idea to tell you
about.
Okay,
tell
me. Are you
ready for this?
Yeah. Have you guys heard of the transcension hypothesis?
No, I have not.
Okay. So I just found out about this last night, and it's a hypothesis by this guy called John Smart. He's an accelerating specialist futurist over in Silicon Valley. The transcension hypothesis is an answer to Fermi's paradox, which is if the universe is so vast and there's all these other planets that have had so much more time to develop intelligent life, how come we don't see it everywhere? Right? Like that's Fermi's paradox, I'm told. And the transcension hypothesis says that if you look at what's happening with technological progress as we head towards the singularity, is the dematerialization and miniaturization of complexity. So like there's more energy per second per gram going through a microchip than there is in the surface of the sun. The most complex thing in the universe that we know of right now is the human being. So complexity gets more complex, but also gets denser. It's what they call STEM, right? And so what is STEM again? Tell me what it stands for. Anyway, I'll remember. But
aliens,
anyway,
aliens, brother. Aliens.
Yeah, no. But what happens is, he says that eventually, this exponentially growing technology, and when we start talking about nanotechnology and putting intelligence into the nanoscale, that we're going to eventually create an artificial black hole and disappear into it, and slingshot into the future, because there's going to be so much density and so much complexity and so much information that eventually is going to create a rupture through space-time, and we're going to disappear into it.
So we're just going to do that just by density of information? Too many hard drives in one spot at one time?
Yeah, well, because he says that the computation event works by shrinking things, and complexity gets smaller and smaller and smaller as the computer chips get faster and faster and faster and more powerful. I mean, look at the complexity that's in an iPhone today. And it's a million times cheaper, a million times smaller, and 1,000 times more powerful than half a building in size was 40 years ago. So in 100 years, imagine the complexity that is going to be in something smaller than an atom, or even scales beyond that. So when our minds, when intelligence is residing on those scales, basically they're saying that eventually we're not going to colonize outer space, we're going to go into the inner space. We're going to go smaller and smaller and smaller in density until we literally create the ultimate universal computer, which is a black hole.
Does everybody have to do this, or can we opt out? Can people opt out?
It's a crazy idea. I don't know if I explained it very well.
Can anybody sit on the sidelines? I've been saying for years that I think that people are responsible for the Big Bang.
There you go. Yeah. Well, the Big Bang could have been birthed from a previous universe that eventually achieved the transcension and disappeared into a black hole.
I think it's a reset button. I think that's why we're so fascinated with technology. We eventually hit a point where we figure something out and we press a button and
we disappear into a black hole, which is birthed as a Big Bang in a new universe.
The whole idea of the Big Bang is really fucking amazing, because it's amazing that science ever would come up with a theory like the Big Bang. It's almost like they had to have a theory, so this was the best one. The universe is constantly expanding.
Yeah.
There's some radio waves from 14 billion years ago we're detecting. Yeah. We believe that was a big explosion. Yeah. Let's just run with this.
Yeah.
And the idea that at one point in time, 14 whatever billion years ago, the universe was so small, it was smaller than the head of a pin. Everything, the entire universe.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
Well, that is ridiculous. But that going the other direction, and I just remembered what the STEM acronym stands for. It's space, time, matter, and energy. Space, time, matter, and energy shrink.
Well, why isn't it STEM then?
Space, time, energy, and matter.
Oh, okay.
My bad.
Okay.
Yeah, space, time, energy, and matter. Compresses as technology progresses.
Right.
So there's less space and less time, and the things are smaller, and less energy going through that matter, and also less matter. So that's the move towards density. It's like a reverse Big Bang.
It's giving me a fucking headache.
Yeah, it's
really ridiculous if I was correct. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's ever thought this up, by the way.
I think that when you
look at, you know, look at nuclear bombs and just nuclear power in general, the fact that, you know, where we control most of our power in major cities is controlled by these nutty fucking nuclear explosions that they've contained. An explosion, but a nuclear reaction that they've contained in the city. And if the power goes out, like it goes in Japan, everyone's fucked. You have to run. Everybody has to get away from them. And it's doomed for 100,000 years.
Crazy.
Just that alone. I mean, it makes me think, like, wow, like, I know I don't have any better options. No, I don't. But this is all you guys got. You guys, I mean, in the 1960s and 70s, this is what you figured out? You figured out how to make nuclear power that if the power goes off, it just eats right through the earth. And then everyone's fucked anywhere near
it. You know, but isn't it mind-blowing what minds can do?
Like, oh, it's incredible.
Because when you think of the scale that we are, like how small and dense a mind is, a thinking being, the amount of synaptic connections inside of something as small as the brain is as many galaxies as there are in the universe. Like that amount of complexity in something so small is what we are. So it's like people say, oh, we're so insignificant. I think we're like really significant. You know what I mean? Like we're the cutting edge of design that has emerged from the universe.
I agree and I don't at the same time. I think, yes, we're very significant if it comes to change on this earth. But the earth is just so goddamn small in the big picture. It's ridiculous to say that we're significant. We're so fucking tiny. I mean,
the fact that we can talk about the whole universe and literally play back the evolution of the universe in our heads, a capacity to understand events that have occurred over deep time.
Not just understand it, but explain it.
Right. So we're creating
on the internet.
We're creating models on the scale of that universe. The universe that you're saying is so much bigger than we are. We're creating internal models of it inside of our heads.
It's true.
So we're fitting the universe in our head as far as virtual conversations about it are. That's what's fucking crazy, which means it fits in our heads.
Yeah.
The design fits in our heads. If we understand it correctly, the smartest people in the world, Einstein among them, could probably contemplate it in his head. And, you know, people who take psychedelics say that they experience the entire universe at once. Maybe they do.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe it's all inside a mushroom. You can see the whole thing. You just got to take a nap on them.
Yeah, well, because the universe expands outwards, but it goes inwards, too. As the scales get smaller, there's an entire universe inside of us, 10 trillion, trillion, trillion atoms. And apparently the scales go smaller.
There's in most atoms, it's just space. Like, you ever, you know, when you look
Somebody told me about that the other night. Most of everything is mostly empty space. Most of us, apparently, is mostly empty space.
Mostly empty space.
We're just pattern integrities, man. Just pattern integrities.
It's so insane to just even try to wrap your head around how complex the whole thing really truly is.
Right.
Which is why people like sticking to neighborhoods and watching the same shows. They want anything that calms down this bizarre feeling of never-ending complexity. You know, that it's impossible to understand or be in control of your universe.
Yeah, well, it's frightening to live in the mystery, to live on the edge of knowledge, to live on the edge of thought. Well, there's a reason we call it the edge, because there looks like there's a ravine on the other end. But I still think, even though as individuals, some of us find that frightening and to each his own, as a collective, I think mankind is always restless and never afraid of the edge. I think mankind always pushes at the edge. And that's what makes me ultimately so optimistic about humanity. We're still here. And it's getting crazy. And look at the stuff that humanity is talking to itself about.
Yeah, about bombing Iran.
that's depressing.
There's a little of that going on too, man. It's going both ways.
It's a self-correcting global organism. So maybe we're self-correcting.
I agree with you. I don't quite share in your optimism because I'm continually fascinated by the stupidity of the human race as well as the intelligence of it. Yeah. I think you can't ignore that. There's a lot of dummies out there, unfortunately.
Totally.
A big percentage of the world's a fucking mess right now. And a lot of those
people
have bombs.
I don't know if it's a big
bombs.
Percentage, but I just think that what is a mess gets magnified and brought to our attention.
Well, it's more than 1%, right? More than 1% of the world's a mess, I would say. Wouldn't you say? When you think about Iraq, Afghanistan, what's going on in Syria, what just happened in Libya, what's going on in Egypt,
there's a lot of things about this that are very exciting, right? I mean, what happened in Libya and in Tunisia.
No, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying it's
you're saying it's a mess. You're saying there's a lot of movement happening.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. We live
it's
in
more than 1%, and you've got 100 people in a room, and one of them is fucking crazy.
I think we live in disruptive times.
Yes.
Yes. Fueled by these accelerating technologies. But I think disruption, it's like going through the birth canal. Mm. It's like, you know, when Timothy Leary says that we're about to, like, you know, shed our skin, you know, we're in the larval stage. We were pre-larval and then we're larval and then we're about to spread our wings potentially. That's where this conversation comes in.
If some new age Hitler doesn't step into the equation.
Fair enough.
God
but,
damn it.
But a good new conversation to have.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's amazing when you really look back at World War II that it was such a short amount of time ago.
It's terrifying.
It's hard to wrap your head around that.
I'm Jewish. I know.
Yeah. It's. What, did you have family that was...
My family fled from Europe. Yeah, on my mother's side. Polish and Russian. Yeah. They went to Venezuela.
Ari interviewed a bunch of... Wasn't his dad in... Well, I don't want to say. Let's see. But yeah, it's incredible that's inside. That could be your grandparents. That could be our lifetime. That's within our grasp.
Frightening.
While, you know, this chain of life is going on, the Holocaust was happening. World War II is happening. I mean, the storming the beaches of Normandy. That's like the most savage shit in human history. You know, cutting people down with machine guns as they run through the sand. I mean, that's our lifetime, man. It's amazing. So really, truly amazing when you stop and think about how crazy that seems.
Yeah, yeah. There was a really interesting article that I read because obviously everything you're saying is very upsetting. It was in Foreign Policy Magazine.
I'll just stop talking, dude. It's cool.
No. But there was an article in Foreign Policy Magazine. It was called "The End of War," and it was one of those counterintuitive articles that you read it and you're like, okay, there's these interesting academics that are saying, yes, this was tragedy. Yes, there have been horrible things. Yes, these numbers, these scales are horrific. But put it in context over deeper, longer time. And what you see is that things are getting better. Hmm. Less wars happening. Just that before, we couldn't cover every war on TV. There were too many conflict zones in the world. But he talks about how there's less and less. It's important to get the other side.
No,
that we don't freak out.
I'm sure that it's better now than it has been ever.
Yeah.
But I think human beings, as just naturally, we look at the errors and the issues that we have, and we see a lot of them that are sort of legacy that aren't corrected, and they've been going on for so long, like war. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I think I was like 8 or something like that when the government pulled out of Vietnam, when the Vietnam War was over, and I remember thinking, like, it's good
we're
done having wars because now people realize that we don't like war. No one's going to go to war anymore. Like, I remember as a child with the idea in my head that I was watching the culture evolve past war. I had like a real sense, especially I think when you're a child, because as you're growing and you're kind of experiencing life and it's being sort of explained to you along the way through experiences, that you start getting an idea that that's how the whole world works, that things just get better over time.
Yeah.
So things get smarter, they improve, because that's what you're doing. You're 8 years old. You're smarter than you were when you were 5.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, a significant leap over, you know, who you are when you're 8.
Yes.
So I think that's how I viewed the world. And I remember in whatever year it was, 91 or 92, when we went Desert Storm.
Right.
What year was that?
91, right?
Maybe. Whatever.
I don't remember.
Might even been 89. But whatever year it was, I remember watching that happen. I remember me and my buddy Jimmy that I used to live with, my roommate, Jim DiTilio. What's up, Jim? We were sitting in front of the TV, and they were showing missiles, like, firing over into Baghdad. And I remember watching that going, what the fuck? And he looks at me and he goes, we're at war, buddy. We're at war. Like, well, that didn't even make sense.
Well, because it seems obsolete compared to all the great things that are happening in the world, right? The massive collaboration, the massive cooperation, you know, people doing things increasingly for free for one another online, people coming together, people protesting against dictatorships, Twitter being used as fuel for dissent and discontent. I mean, there's so many encouraging trends that whenever you kind of contemplate the fact that there's still bad things out there, you realize, well, the contrast also makes you realize, wow, there's aspects of us that are so obsolete. We need a firmware upgrade But we're fucking, we're getting there. Well, Singularity University is what you need to go, man. I'm sure they love to have
I do
you.
Need to go.
Yeah, we had, actually, Will.i.am was there.
Really?
Yeah, and then he did a talk and a panel. We had this company that does a
Wait a minute. Will.i.am gets to talk at the Singularity University?
Him and the head of Fox.
What
and,
is he talking about?
The head of, well, because making he was talking beats? About, no, using these technologies.
Getting for, hot bitches on the road.
The creative and good uses of these technologies and how we need to spread these technologies to those that are less... less lucky than we are and whatnot.
I'm sure he was talking about nice things. I just have to crack jokes.
And we saw two paralyzed people walk. This bionics company who makes these like exoskeletons.
I've seen those.
Demonstrated two paralyzed people standing up and walking. I mean, it was insane.
That's really intense. Yeah, I've seen that. Very emotional. That exoskeleton is fucking nuts, man. Yeah. That's like something right out of a Marvel comics, man.
Totally, right? It looks like a trailer for a movie that takes place in the future that's showing you how we got there. Yeah. Like archival footage from the future.
It just totally makes sense, right? It's the future. They're going to figure out, artificial bodies eventually.
Dude, absolutely.
For sure they're going to be able to put your head on someone else's body.
Dude.
And an artificial...
Avatars. Well, isn't there a Wired magazine story about the man who wants to build the real avatar?
Could you imagine if they get so good at surgery that they build an artificial you and the head is open and they just have to sew it up and stuff your brain in there. They only have like a certain amount of time where they could take your brain and reattach it.
That would be interesting.
They open your... Good night, Mr. Jones. Boom. Cut open your... Next thing I see, you're going to be 20 years old and invincible. They cut open your fucking brain, suck it out real quick, and they only have a couple minutes, and then they screw it into this new brain. Turn it on. Fire up, Mr. Jones. You hear us, Mr. Jones?
Well, I think
37 seconds. We're good. You got a new life.
And there you go.
Mr. Jones made the trip into a synthetic body with his biological brain. Is that possible?
Well, I think by the time that we can do that, we will be non-biological in the sense that we'll have far greater than human intelligence and sentience residing in decentralized non-biological substrates.
Do you feel like that about spaceflight?
On the nanoscale.
Do you feel like that? I've never felt like we're going to go to other planets.
We definitely are. We're going to go to Mars in less than 10 years. Elon Musk, man,
Newt Gingrich was saying,
did you
hear that?
Yes. Yes.
Newt Gingrich said, if you let me in office by the second term, we'll have a base on the moon.
Well, we don't need governments for that. See, that's the difference of where we are now. It's going to happen by private space flight. It's going to be the techno-philanthropists like Elon Musk who have the vision and the resources to make it happen. And they benefit from the emerging technologies because something that was that the cost was impossible 20 years ago, all of a sudden it's been miniaturized, is infinitely more affordable. Oh, we're going to space, and then we're going to send artists into space. And then that will transform the human condition.
We have to decide like who the artists are, because last thing you want is shitty poetry from outer space.
Well, imagine you in space, analyzing it philosophically, a podcast from space. How that would influence your thoughts, your ideas.
How about we just get a green screen and put some space behind me? And
maybe
we'll
that will work.
And we'll pretend
we're
in space.
That will be the same.
And we'll put on our NASA suits. Do you have your NASA suit, Brian?
Yep.
Mine's in the trunk.
Very cool, man.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what the future holds, but I think the Big Bang machine might come before space travel. I mean, I'm just guessing.
The Big Bang machine.
They might press the Big Bang button before we figure out how to get to other planets.
I hope not, man. We have to at least figure out how to back ourselves up.
What if you fucking fly out to Mars? What if you fly out to Mars and it's just like the shittiest parts of Arizona? It's just like the shittiest parts of the Arizona desert. And you're like, you know what? There's spots like this that suck on America. I could have just driven there.
Right.
I didn't have to fucking fly in a rocket ship to some place with no air to see a shitty part of the universe that I could have seen in Arizona.
Yeah, I don't think
rock desert areas where there's no one but rattlesnakes
like
for 100,000 fucking square miles. Yeah.
Dude, fair enough. And I think that those that go are not going to swim on Mars's beautiful beaches. I think they're going for the feeling that they will have when they look out that window and see another celestial body. They're going there for the wanderlust, the awe. They're going there for the awe. That's their religious feeling. That's them getting off on God.
Anybody who really choose to give up essentially years and years of their lives for this scientific adventure. I mean, that's what they're doing. It's going to take like 6 months to get to Mars. That's a real hero.
And there's going to be a lot of one-way tickets, like you were saying.
That's a real hero. And who knows, by the way, what the fuck happens to your body out there in radiation and deep space.
Who knows?
And how unhealthy it is to be in the atmosphere. And you know, and then what are they going to do? They're going to have to do some sort of what is it called when you change the atmosphere of a new planet?
With terraform.
Terraform.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they would have to terraform.
Yeah.
And so they would have to build machines that actually create oxygen and then hope it stays stable.
But you want to go a little crazier, man, a little farther into the future. That will all be done with nanotechnology. The physicist Freeman Dyson says we'll be able to have the entire biosphere of the world decoded, the genome of the entire biosphere of everything that's living on planet Earth in something that's a few micrograms in weight and so at the nanoscale. And we'll be able to send those nanotechnology instructions to self-replicate and seed the universe. I did a whole rant about it. This is a physicist talking about this. Like, this is the thing. It's not like some, like, you know, hippie tripping. This is a physicist who's, you know, at one time was probably a hippie tripping and became a physicist.
It makes sense when you think about how small data holding, you know, cell, you know, little hard drives now and what they're going to be like. I mean, they've got computers that are as small as a grain of sand now.
Oh, dude, quantum computing is going to be doing superposition, which means like being one and zero at the same time.
Yeah, what is that?
What
explain
is that
to
exactly.
me superposition. Does anybody, do you understand it?
I'm no expert, but superposition means that
something can be in motion and still at the same time. Exist and not exist.
Yes.
In two different places at once.
Yeah, something can be a particle and a wave at the same time. And so it can something can be at the same time in two different points in the universe.
And
simultaneously
this is,
and communicate.
And this is not horseshit, right? This is all
proven stuff.
No,
this is all proven stuff.
But
at least accepted in the quantum physics community.
Doesn't that make you want to toss all previous notions about reality aside, when you look at something like that and you go, wait a minute.
Yes.
The very foundation of everything that we see, touch, feel, observe, know exists.
Is illusory.
What?
Yes.
It's a goddamn program.
Yeah.
Dude, it's the fucking Matrix.
Yeah, there's
the Matrix.
My friend,
really is real. The Matrix didn't go far enough.
But that's why the movie was so brilliant. And that's why Inception was similarly on those same, my friend has a shirt. It has these two guys sitting in a chair, and one of them says, are we just graphics on an imaginary T-shirt? And the other guy says, that's ludicrous. But you could extend that and extrapolate that to us.
Yeah.
Are we just like two dudes in some virtual simulation that somebody else is playing with? And then you're like, nah. And then it zooms out, and it shows like that we're playing on some screen for someone else's entertainment.
Well, the game was really good.
Which is what's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing like a really good game of Quake, when you're in the zone, man, you're not thinking, hey, I'm playing Quake.
Oh, no,
it's real.
You're locked in there.
Inside. You're hopping and moving.
Oh,
you're a part of it.
We can be in multiple realities, dude. There's no doubt. We're already doing it with flat screens that are not even that immersive, and we can lose ourselves in it.
Right, so imagine, if this is artificial, it could be just so good, it feels real. Which makes sense for a lot of shit.
Absolutely.
Where I've said so many times that the world feels like a piece of fiction. That the word, the reality, when a guy like, you know what, when I yelled shut the fuck up at the TV when that Anthony Weiner guy got caught with taking pictures of his dick. I'm like, come on, man. This is shitty writing.
Like, this is
shitty
writing.
If this was a sitcom, I'd get mad.
Well, you know what?
That's a
movie.
Yeah.
A movie about a guy that's criticizing the screenplay of life.
Yeah.
Starring you would be
really
funny.
It wasn't that I was criticizing. It was that it was like Coen Brothers-esque.
Yeah,
like it was so preposterous that it seemed like all of a sudden we're in a movie. Guy named Weiner takes pictures of his cock.
Dude, the
just
clues,
throws them on the internet.
The clues are everywhere, man. Row your boat.
What? What does that mean?
Well, the last line of "Row, row, row your boat." It says, "Life is but a dream."
Life is but a dream. Yeah, but
merrily,
that could just be
merrily,
a song
life is but a dream.
They probably had to rhyme, make something rhyme.
What
Jesus
is life if not the pursuit of a dream? What if life is not the pursuit of a dream? There's clues everywhere, man.
Yeah. Or someone could have been really high when they wrote that.
Yeah.
That doesn't.
Jesus wrote that song.
Yeah, I've written a lot of shit high that I'm embarrassed about.
Yeah.
Like your one joke.
Yeah, it's true. I really did write that.
That's funny.
What do we do to sort of, I mean, I guess what we're doing is what you're doing right now. I mean, what we can do as individuals.
We're creating memes.
Yeah, and what we can do is retweet things that resonate with us.
Absolutely.
Talk about things that
well, you,
with us.
Every time you retweet something, 600,000 minds are.
Potentially,
fair enough. But 600,000 is a very big number.
It's huge.
So even if only 10, if the tweet that you sent out triggers a butterfly effect in his thought that opens up a whole new stream of possibilities for that person. That's real transformation.
Yeah.
So it's natural selection playing out at a faster and faster rate because things are happening. So you're creating artful change in the world using the power of your mind.
Yeah.
Somebody listening to this might invent, you know, some new poem that becomes the campaign for some brand that, you know, transforms the world. Like I said, the butterfly effect. But we're talking on scales and numbers where that's possible. I've seen the engaged, inspired audience, you know, interface with you. Like, I've seen it. So it's like, it's kind of
well.
Amazing.
They're responding to you too, man. They're responding to your ideas and your passion about it. And well, you know, one of the cool things about having a podcast is someone right now could be anywhere, you know, doing some tedious work around the house or whatever,
right?
And they were in a certain state of mind, and the conversations, the topics that you brought up, and the way we've explored these topics, all of a sudden their mind is fucking racing,
right?
You know, and that is a real cool thing. That is a really cool thing that we can do something like that. Yeah. That to me is one of the most satisfying aspects of this, that you can entertain someone and engage them and literally put them on a little bit of a mental journey where they start just thinking about these different subjects. Yeah,
absolutely.
Nanotechnology, and you start exploring it and seeing how bizarre it is.
Dude,
some of the references that you use, you go and look them up and go, holy fuck.
So many people asked for book recommendations after our session.
Oh, yeah, I'm
like,
sure.
So many.
Yeah,
dude.
I've got to eventually like make like a thing on my website.
We
like,
need to
my
do
favorite
that.
Books, you know, there's favorite documentaries. There's a documentary thread on the message board. But
you know,
I need to make that popular.
I'm such a big fan of Joseph Campbell and the sort of monomyth and the hero's journey. But like, see, think of the hero's journey. We think so literally. So we're like, obviously a geographical journey. Like if you go on a safari and you climb Kilimanjaro, you will go through all the steps, a departure from the ordinary, overcoming obstacles, having a catharsis and realization and making the return. But we need to apply that metaphor internally. This podcast session is a Joseph Campbell-esque hero's journey. Person puts on the headphones and it's a departure.
Who's the prince and who's the princess?
No.
I just want to know.
We don't
need... going on a hero's journey.
No,
here.
But think this is the hero's journey. It follows the steps. It's a departure from the ordinary. We're partaking in conversations that are maybe not your everyday conversations. We're overcoming obstacles in the sense that we're challenging preconceived truths and questioning ourselves and asking difficult questions and thinking new thoughts. So that's the obstacles. And then we're transcending and overcoming the resistance that we have to change into new ways of thinking. And then we're having hopefully the catharsis. Hopefully sometime during this journey we have a moment of profound realization that changes us both and somebody listening to forever. And then we make the return, which is to say, I love that. I want to share that with my community. I'm going to tweet it. I'm going to Facebook it. So if you apply that metaphor of the hero's journey, you try to make parts of your life significant hero's journey. I'm going to wake up in the morning. I'm going to be like, today I'm going to depart from the ordinary. I'm going to put myself in uncomfortable situations. I'm going to transcend those boundaries. I'm going to have a new realization. I want this day to mean something and then make the return and share with
my
community.
Right, but what if that day you got like a bunch of shit you need to get done?
You listen to this podcast.
Like, and
it happens because it can happen in your brain too.
Right.
I'm going to read this book tonight. I'm going to check out this interesting documentary.
It's definitely
1 hour a day is enough.
To expose yourself to different things.
Absolutely.
That's why I really get into Finding Bigfoot. I've been watching that a lot lately, Brian.
No.
That's probably a good
it's one of the things I've been
isn't
watching
it just
it.
A waste of time for you though?
Fuck yeah, it's a waste of time, but I'm trying to write some new material. I'm doing my special, by the way. It's confirmed. It's going to be happening in Atlanta on April 20th at the Tabernacle Theater, and most of the tickets are sold out for the first show, but we're going to do a second show. So we'll have the first show, I think, is at 8. The second show will be 10:30. And the second show tickets will go on sale sometime this week, probably today's Monday, sometime probably Wednesday, I would guess. And it'll be me and Joey Diaz and Duncan Trussell. Holla! And I'll be recording my new comedy special and releasing it Louis C.K. style on the internet for
$5.
That's
brilliant, dude.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
How you gotta do it.
Brilliant.
That's what you
got to
call
dude.
It, too. You got to call it Louis C.K.
brilliant.
style.
That's and you're going to be in New York too at some point, right?
Yeah,
I'm going to be there.
Are you
going to
be
there? Let's link up.
What day is that?
I'm going to be there all of April, man. So
oh, you are? Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Actually, I should tell you this because this is really cool.
I'll be
I'm
there
actually,
May 5th. May 4th.
Okay, so let's link up.
Okay.
But actually, next week, man, I'm heading up to, or this week, at the end of this week, I'm heading up to the Bay Area because on the 20th, I'm speaking at Stanford Design School and showing some of my crazy ecstatic videos.
Oh, wow.
And then on the 27th, on March 27th, I'm speaking at Google. I was invited to speak there. Yeah, I'm going to show some of the videos. And then on March 28th, I'm going to be speaking at the Economist Ideas Festival on Innovation at Berkeley.
Wow.
It's going to be sick. All about showing the videos. It's about talking about inspiration, creativity, new ways of packaging and disseminating ideas. Then I go to New York, and on March 30th, I'm speaking at the PSFK conference in Battery Park. And then
instead of making people memorize this stuff, because most of them won't. What is your website? Where is there this all?
JasonSilva.com? If you go to thisisjasonsilva.com.
This is JasonSilva.com.
Yes, but the best thing, honestly, is Twitter.
Twitter.
At Jason_Silva, S-I-L-V-A. Okay.
Yeah, and if you can't find it, it's on mine, talking about this podcast.
Yeah, that way I keep people updated on all the talks. And then April 20th, the National Arts Club in New York City. I'm going to be speaking as well.
That's amazing. Really cool. And this is all because of your videos that you produce for the internet, which are really amazing. And if you Google Jason Silva Vimeo, there's a whole page with a gang of them on. And Vimeo is a nice high-quality visual, too.
Yeah, I love Vimeo, man. They're amazing.
It's very high quality. Like, when you can go full screen with it on a large screen. It looks great.
They get it. And the design, it's made for like artists. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, Vimeo is awesome. We put all of our podcasts up on Vimeo. We also put a video blog up. We put that on Vimeo as well. But yeah, I think that's incredible, man, that you've getting all this work just from those videos popping up on the internet. How did you get started in this, man? What is your background as far as like education? And
Man. Well, I grew up in Venezuela, and I went to international school. And of course, after Venezuela, I was in film school, and I did Current TV, which was Al Gore's TV channel for like the last 5 years. But it was really when I left last year that I wanted to do my own content.
Did you ever get massages with Al?
No, we didn't
go to a hotel.
No.
Got really baked and
didn't Al have some massage problems?
I don't know. But the short videos were just, I wanted to like apply in principle what I was believing intellectually. Like I wanted to make content that was mimetic, because I believe we live in a world where short form content disseminated through the internet can infect people, can transform minds. We don't need the sort of the old gatekeepers, so to speak. Man, everybody's empowered. And so the reason short videos are easier to consume through small devices and this and that, and you don't ask for people for too much of their time. You know, see,
that's a big thing.
Well, until you've won them over, like you. And then people, I know that people love to listen to you for a long time.
Well, like they love the podcast, because what most people do is they listen to it while they're doing other stuff. Well,
that's
best way to do it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Well, it's a real genre, you know, that hasn't really been addressed before.
Yeah.
You know,
I love coming here with you because it gives me a chance to talk about these ideas in a space in which is bigger and people are listening to it. But, you know, for my situation, to initially get the word out about the videos, it just worked to do them really short. Mm-hmm. But what I think people respond to them is, whether or not they're into the ideas of exponential growth and technology and transforming the human condition, people are into the idea that inspiration needs to be reinvented. How we package and disseminate big ideas needs to be reexamined, because we have a new substrate. The internet is a new substrate. When we invented the printing press, we came up with the format of the book, and there was like rules and parameters, and this is how it works best. Television, we came up with the sitcom. Film, we came up with the length of time that a film should be before people get restless in the theater, and so on and so forth. And I think on the internet, we're still figuring it out.
Yeah.
What are the parameters that work? What are the lengths of videos that we look at the statistics and get the information and find out how long people pay attention to stuff and this and that. And so I'm just trying to raise that conversation.
I get excited when I find long form documentaries available on like Google Video and YouTube. Sometimes
people don't do it yet on their screens.
Yeah.
We're going to have that more when we have the merger of TV and with the web.
Apple TV
and stuff. Yeah. Then you're on the TV, you're on the couch watching TV, watching web content, and it's different experience. It's not just the small screen.
Right.
So when the screens merge, I think we'll have
that. Do you think that's entirely going to happen? Oh. You don't think that it'll be have the separation of computer and television?
No, I think software is going to eat the world. That was a great article that
so
I read.
So do you think that like networks, like NBC, AB, that's like legacy, it's all gonna like be like VHS tape someday?
Yeah,
I think we're really gonna be interfacing. I think the Apple TV thing is coming, is my feeling, and that is gonna make everything intuitive. And I read an article yesterday from Nick Bilton from the Times, where he was saying that he gets anxious when he looks at his cable and TV box, because there's so many buttons and it's so complicated, and he doesn't know what input is connected to what most of the stuff he doesn't want to watch, and there's so many over. And he says that he looks at his like iPad and everything's so neat, and he can press what he wants and get what he wants in real time.
July.
And we're moving in that direction. I mean, have you guys checked out HBO Go? It's really cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, on your computer, watch anything, anytime, on demand, all if you're an HBO subscriber. But like a premium, beautiful, you know, experience. I think
that's the
future.
That's
beautiful. And you know, another thing that's the future, which is it's still clunky today. And I can't believe it's still clunky. Like the other day I wanted to find a show on a channel. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what the channel is. I have 1,000 numbers. So I'm like going through each channel like, God, where the fuck is this channel? You know,
it should be a search and feature.
So,
right?
You know, it's just going to be Siri. It's going to be turn to the Cartoon Network. And that's all it's going to be. Right. And then the remote control alone is just such, it's like looking at an old payphone.
Yeah, when the UFC moved to Fuel TV, when they have some fights on Fuel TV, I had to find Fuel TV.
It took forever, right?
Good fucking luck, man.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It sucks.
Yeah. It's like 618 on DirecTV.
And especially when you have like HD channels now too. Like you, half the time you're watching, you're not even watching the HD channel, and you're like, oh shit, how long have I been watching this?
Yeah, there's so many channels now, man. It's stupid. It's amazing.
It's really stupid. That's why I think the Apple TV, when it does get released, I think that's just going to change everything. I think everything's going to be a la carte. I think, you know, yeah, NBC's going to be around, but they're going to be like any other channel. It's going to be like, you know, your channel. You know,
well, people like shows though. They like Lost. They like things that are going to be produced by a production company that you might not be able to replicate, you know, the home user, you know, even with incredible software.
I think people will always want the premium experience, and they're willing to pay for the premium experience. Yeah. I mean, I don't care to pay $20 to see an IMAX 3D film in a theater and be completely immersed in an experience like that. So,
did you like Avatar?
I thought it was beautiful.
Did you feel any Avatar depression once you left?
You know, I think that's fascinating, don't you think? I
love it.
That idea.
Yeah.
Like, there's a great book called The Art of Immersion by Frank Rose, who used to be at Wired, who says that the future of immersive storytelling, and an example is Avatar, is such an immersive 3D experience. And he says, we all long to go back to Pandora, even though we've never really been there.
Yeah.
We miss something that wasn't really real. But then again, everything is not really real, right? Because it's all an illusion. But more and more, dude, immersive experiences like that. Yes. We're gonna get sad when we fall out of the game or out of the movie or out of the virtual space, because it's increasingly becoming more interesting than reality.
If people got Avatar depression, really they got depression that they weren't one of those blue things. Because you wouldn't want to be living in Avatar if you were a human. You're just a little fucking bitch.
I think it was just so pretty.
That got jacked left and right. Yeah, but humans like didn't even have a chance in the Avatar world. Like, you can't have Avatar depression. You essentially have depression about your species. You don't want to. You want to be one of the Na'vi.
You want to be larger than life, but that can be a
well. You want to live that lifestyle that they're living—the love and honor.
When I was little, I used to get Indiana Jones depression. When Indiana Jones ended, I used to get sad. I wanted to dig for treasure in my backyard, and I wanted to have my life to be as fun as Indiana Jones's. So I remember that feeling as a kid. You know, I really remember leaving films and wanting the luster and the awe to sort of come home with me.
But
usually, you buy the beat of Betamax and you watch
the idea of Avatar, though, was that the culture of Avatar was missing everything that we're missing, or rather that the culture of Avatar, the culture of the Na'vi, had everything that we're missing. That our lost society, that our materialistic, ridiculous, you know, society where we're not taking responsibility for our own actions, we all act collectively as a gigantic group or corporation, that this tribal life where all these people were forced to toe their own weight and celebrated and loved each other.
Yeah, but that tribal life that supposedly was so advanced, I mean, they still had hierarchical systems. There was still an angry boss that told everybody else what to do. There were still warriors, like... They didn't really transcend our savagery. In fact,
but they're happier than secretaries. Well, no,
there's an interesting thing that Kurzweil had mentioned that he thought it was really interesting that you use the world's greatest technology to bring our imaginings into being to make that movie to then criticize technology in the movie. So you use the most powerful computers and digital tools to realize that dream into screen. And then you tell a story inside of that technologically mediated reality. You tell a story about how bad technology is and how we should all go live in the forest again.
Not really. What they told the story about was about greed and about the willingness to fuck over cultures and kill entities.
That
just
also,
to get
but
crazy
a lot of
mineral.
People came out of that and said it was an indictment of technology.
What was the mineral? Impossiburanium or something like that? It was some stupid fucking name. It was like, what was it called, Brian?
I don't know. They saw the movie once.
Obtanium. Inobtainium, impossible to obtain, something along those lines, like, oh, you silly goose.
There's a great term called computeranium that I recently learned. Ah. And I think it's when we leverage all the matter in the universe or in the galaxy into computation. So all the atoms, we put computation into everything, and then it becomes a computronium.
Whoa.
I'm not sure if I'm explaining it correctly, but yeah, this idea that civilization will eventually get advanced, that it can leverage all the matter in the universe and put computation into it. Harness all the matter and energy in the universe.
What does that even mean? Could you use that to
get you to work? Everything will have computation in it. Well, you know how there's, you know, our computers are built of materials, and we put computation into those.
So we could put computation into the stars?
Yeah. That's, yeah.
How the fuck would you do that?
I'm not a physicist, but this is stuff that you can find physical articles that, you know, speculate about the future and how a society will cross a scale and then it will harness the energy of its star and put computation into matter and terraform other worlds. And yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, but dude, we already do it inside of computers. I mean, computation and complexity inside of a microchip. The only other thing as complex is the brain.
You know what I find?
Nothing else in the universe has that complexity.
I find fascinating when I go back to like some 1980s and 1990s science fiction movies. I like watching like what they thought a computer was going to be like. Like the movie Alien, I watched that again the other day. One of my all-time favorite movies. An amazing movie and still holds up as far as
you
like
suspense.
You
must be excited about Prometheus though.
Oh,
huh?
Fuck yeah.
Oh man, I saw the 3D trailer in a theater.
Anything Ridley Scott comes up with, I'm down for. It's but The first Alien movie is one of my all-time favorite movies. But God, the computer looks so fucking wonky and shit. And, and it was fascinating that, like, you know, when you look at, like, some of these older movies, they'll be like, they'll take place in 2017. and it's like nothing looks anything like today. Right. Everything's super futuristic, flying cars and shit. Like, when was Blade Runner supposed to be taking place in? How far in the future was it?
That's a good question.
I don't think it was that far. I don't think it would be anything close to what...
If you would see some of the little flying robots that they showed at TED this year.
Oh, I saw some of those.
2019.
The choreographed flying little helicopters that could do a dance and go around obstacles and objects. And those are going to have HD cameras and they can map rooms. The Google self-driving cars... 200,000 miles they've driven with zero accidents. A million people a year die in road accidents, okay? A million people a year. When we switch over to those self-driving cars, which we already know after 200,000 miles, no accidents. They're only going to get better.
What cars are going to be.
Of course.
Self-driving cars.
Just like airplanes, man. But then humans are too unreliable.
You'd never be able to go sideways around a corner.
You can do it in a sport track.
You'd have to go to a track.
Yeah. It'll be a sport, but not in a place where you can hit a pedestrian or hurt somebody else, you know?
Of course.
That would be that, but that's
that's amazing.
Coming, man.
It's amazing.
Those Google guys, they're geniuses.
Yeah, they're so. No one saw them coming. I mean, if there was a Skynet and Skynet wanted to sneak up on society and just sort of integrate itself completely, I mean, it is Google. Isn't there like a website? Google is Skynet.com or something like that.
Yeah, but I think at this point, their ambition of don't be evil is holding
no
so true.
Doubt
I mean,
about
I think
it.
That
I love Google. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I'm saying it's amazing with Google Maps, Google fucking voicemail, and Google Gmail. You know,
all free.
Jesus Christ.
All free.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible.
There's a whole book about how everything is dematerializing and it's becoming for free. We used to have a camera, but now a camera doesn't exist because it's inside your phone. Yeah. You used to have like a notebook to write things down. That disappeared because now it's all on your phone.
Which, by the
everything way... Everything is dematerializing and going into your devices.
Have you seen this new device that's just come out? There's a new droid that came out. The Samsung Journal.
Oh.
Have you seen this thing?
The pen one. The note.
Dude, it's fucking 5 inches.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
It's the biggest one ever. It's like a cross between a tablet and an iPhone.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
beautiful. I bet the battery lasts about 35 seconds.
Totally.
On full brightness, you got about a half a minute.
That's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy that new iPad 3 has the same battery life, but yet the screen's HD.
That's exponential growth right there, dude.
Yeah, the battery life on those iPads is amazing.
They sold out their first batch already, dude. Yeah. The demand is unprecedented, dude.
It's pretty shocking how long you can watch a movie on those things. You watch three, four movies. And you look at it, it's not even like halfway juiced with the battery.
I can't wait for the iMind. You think they're already working on the iMind?
What is that?
It'll be like a synthetic mind. You know,
I don't trust them.
Directly.
I don't trust them.
I can't wait for the iCar. They need to make car stuff.
Oh, yeah,
iCar. They need to make a car.
Well, they'll do their counterpart to Google's self-driving Android cars, and then Apple needs its iCar.
Jesus, how long before we see self-driving cars on the street?
Very soon.
I think very soon. Because Google already has them driving in California, and there's been over 200,000 miles. Yeah.
They're driving in California right now? Like, you could be rear-ended by a fucking machine?
Well, there's been zero accidents in 200,000 miles.
You want to be
son? They map three-dimensional maps of what's in front of them. Dude, it's insane. They can see. Like, they can see, and they can notice people walking, and they'll adjust accordingly. It's insane.
You know what freaks me out, man?
Insane.
We got onto this through the idea of robotics and flying drones. Yeah. What freaks me out is those things that walk that have like 10, 15 legs, and you kick them and they adjust.
Yeah, that one that looks like a dog, dude, that you immediately sympathize with.
That thing, man, that's incredible.
You should have seen the TED Talk. The head of DARPA gave a TED Talk, dude, and she was the most poised, elegant, articulate, attractive woman, dude.
Isn't that the people from Lost?
DARPA is the Defense Advanced Research Project.
DARPA, I know.
Yeah, I know, DARPA. She was amazing. She was talking about dreaming the impossible. She actually reminded me of Jodie Foster's character in Contact. This is really like elegant, poised, articulate. You actually felt comforted to know that somebody that intelligent seeming is like running DARPA. And her TED Talk was unbelievable.
What did she talk about?
She was talking about dreaming the impossible, and we have to challenge what is in order to dream about what could be, and you know. And she's speaking on behalf of the agency that has invented a lot of stuff, so it's kind of amazing.
What have they invented?
I don't know, but a lot of stuff that we take for granted today. Cutting edge stuff.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
If you don't know, how can you be sure?
Well, because if you read about DARPA all the time, they do the Advanced Secret Research Project.
Wow. I wonder what they're working on.
She showed a hypersonic plane.
We still never got the aliens.
We didn't get to aliens.
No, we went on.
I took you on a crazy journey. About transcension. Why we could never see them. Fermi's paradox.
You don't think we'll ever see them?
Only when we build our own black hole and go into it, then we'll meet them at the end of time.
Whoa!
Because it slingshots you at into
so it's
the
not
future.
Possible that they could just be like roaming through this universe in galactic.
No, because that if they did that, that would influence our evolution. Us discovering them and being influenced by their technology would be influencing our ultimate evolution. It would create a butterfly effect. And the thing that John Smart says is they wouldn't want to do that because that would be akin to incest. To influencing us in some way and then changing how we unfold.
Okay. Devil's advocate. This is through our understanding of genetics, right? It's not through theirs. And if they're a thousand or a million years more advanced than us, maybe they know a lot more about how to work that shit.
Right, and maybe that's why he says
so maybe
involved,
it's not that they would think of it as incest at all, but they've completely gone past the idea of gender. And replication by means of sexuality is just what we have to do to make one step from the primate form.
Right. But they wouldn't want us to replicate their technology.
Gray, alien, large, almond-shaped eye form.
Right.
Well, they wouldn't want us to replicate their technology, says who? I mean,
well, maybe there's some sort of thing that will lead to the most amount of diversity. And if we're not influenced by them, there'll be more diversity because we'll get there ourselves. It's just beginning to get.
Well, the idea,
that's what he says.
The idea that people really love to share when it comes to wacky alien theories is that aliens have genetically engineered human beings in the first place.
Well, you can't unprove that. So that's
that's a problem, right? You can't unprove leprechauns, bro. You know? Yeah.
No.
Why can science?
Video. Yeah, that's
the thing. That's the dog thing. We're watching
this.
The nuttiest thing about this weird looking robot thing is that it moves. It has like sort of like an insect like leg setup. But if you kick it, it adjusts and it doesn't fall down.
Yeah, look, it's adjusting to the sand and the water.
Totally,
and walking
on
the beach.
And if that thing starts saying hi to you and smiling and drooling,
having
you would totally fall in love.
You know
with
what
it.
I'm seeing? Put that thing on one more second. You know what I'm saying? I'm seeing that thing storm out of the back of a giant battleship and missiles flying off of it. That's what I think. I think if they make one of those fucking things, they make it to send over to countries. Could you imagine a whole army of these motherfuckers heading into your town, shooting missiles?
I'm imagining them as pets for people who are lonely.
Rocket launchers on that bitch.
It's always a double-edged sword. I have to admit, it's always a double-edged sword. But look,
What if people start riding them? They become the new horses.
Yeah, they will become the new horses. They'll be our little pets. Look, it's wagging its tail. Oh, don't you feel bad for it when he kicks it? You feel bad for it.
So human-like.
Yeah, but think of how quickly you feel bad for it.
I do, but what's amazing is this thing adjusted. And it seems to be adjusting. The movements seem organic.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Totally. Biomimicry.
We're going to have one of those, and we're going to ride them like a goat down the side of a mountain. That's
amazing.
What it's going to be. Like, you know those crazy goats that can, they're incredibly strong, and they can like climb up the side of mountains?
We'll ride these. They never complain.
They're not goats,
they'll
right?
never
they're
complain.
Sheep, right?
Yeah, they never get tired. They don't have ache.
Yeah, but then they probably run on solar power, too.
Yeah.
Eventually, solar power is going to get to a point where it can power everything, right?
Of course. Dude, we get 10,000 times more energy from the sun than we need.
This fucking thing's slow
as
shit.
We just need to get better ways of capturing that energy.
I'd be pissed. If I was riding this stupid thing right now, I'd be like, come on, bitch.
Free
for
energy.
Real?
That's what the
heavy.
Sun gives us, free energy.
It's too heavy, Brian?
Yeah, for that, you know, how it's going, it can't.
Oh, wow,
it's
making it through
it's
snow.
Fascinating.
That is incredible. It's walking through snow. And there's a bunch of different designs of them, too. I've seen other ones that have, like, many more legs. Wow, that's crazy looking.
Yeah.
This thing's dancing
robotics,
around.
Robotics, man. Robotics is going to be such a huge... Well, robotics and AI.
Yeah.
Artificially intelligent
Jesus
robots.
Jesus Christ. Look at that. The down to the bare skeleton of the thing.
Yeah.
This is incredible stuff, folks. I know we're just talking right now. Unfortunately, for a lot of you folks that are listening to this on iTunes, just what should they Google, Brian, so they could watch this?
This is Boston Dynamics, but it's just a new big dog robot.
New big dog robot video.
It's, and it looks like a spider when you're looking.
Really, it's a must. And it's the one that has 700 plus thousand hits on it. It's a must see. You need to know.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's, I mean, what does the future hold that we're not prepared for? What is the next step? You know, I mean, the internet, I think, caught most people by surprise.
Is yeah. That, well, they're, we're
is
in
that
for
a,
some...
Is that a robot dog?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Brian just put on a robot dog, and this thing is moving around like an animated dog. This is insane.
The thing is, there was a guy at TED that showed his...
Oh, my God, that's insane. Yeah. That dog's insane.
No, well, there's
sorry,
be,
this guy at TED,
gonna,
what?
No, no, no. There's going to be more of those kinds of robots, and the more that they... interface with us and they look cute, it doesn't matter if they're conscious or not,
right.
Once they cross a certain kind of perceptual barrier that we have and they're like, yeah, they seem real, we'll start to interface with them as,
well, they're
going to
be our friends,
real.
Just like your dog. 100%. You know, when you come home and you have a I come home and have a conversation
there
with my
you
dog
go. It doesn't matter if it understands you or not, it's just about the feedback.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we'll have the same thing with robots, dude.
Yeah, as long as we can get past the idea that something that's metal and wires and, you know, that thing can't have some sort of a soul.
Yeah.
Because you're interacting with it, you know, if you're interacting with it, as long
you'll
as it doesn't
plant
get needy,
a soul in it.
What if your fucking computer gets needy?
You know, it might. Well, maybe you might want it to get needy because it'll make you feel like you're important to
right.
someone.
Maybe that's a part of like what it's like to
the
have a robot
loops.
Fuck doll. That a robot fuck doll, the really good ones, like they're really dangerous. Like this bitch might burn your house down. Like you can't fuck other girls. Like she's going to be the best, hottest robot fuck doll ever.
The
but
robots will
super
give you
jealous.
whatever you want.
And that's the only way to make it hot. The only way to make it hot, she has to be super jealous. She can't just let you just treat her like shit.
I mean,
why aren't you sharing your location services
those
with me?
Yeah, she becomes a robot, an angry, psycho, jealous robot. And that's the hottest sex you can get. And so that's why everybody just accepts it.
You'll be able to get whatever you want. The robots are going to be...
They'll be Asian robot fuck dolls. Really, don't ask no questions. Just take care of business, son. Right? They'll always be the exotic Asian robot fuck dolls.
Yeah. You know, there's interesting. We keep talking about all this exotic technology, and it sounds...
I think we were talking about Asians. We're talking about
sounds,
girls,
it sounds hallucinatory. Even though it's very quickly emerging.
Yeah.
And it just takes you back to that whole thing about computers as the modern version of the psychedelics.
I just want to say, if you're an Asian girl, I'm just joking around. These are just jokes. I just throw things out there. I don't mean anything by them. Okay?
But what do you think of that? Like, the whole Timothy Leary, you know,
well,
computers are the LSD of the 90s. Like, people took drugs, and they're like, we can expand our minds, and now computers expand our minds.
Well,
that relationship is very fascinating to me.
It's absolutely fascinating. Well, right now, just think this, what's this interface that's happening right now. This is all live.
Right.
You know, and right now, there's only 2,000 people are synced up live with us.
Right.
But eventually, this feeling of this conversation and these ideas explored are going to branch out to about a half. Half a million people.
Right. So half a million minds
and out of
are
half
hearing
a million,
our thoughts.
Yeah, and so, out of that half a million, who knows how many people are going to just, you know, I read this Tony Robbins thing once where he talked about Tony Robbins actually very positive. You know, a lot of people think that Tony Robbins is full of shit because he's kind of like made a lot of money.
Oh, no, I think he's brilliant.
He's got a lot of very, very good points. Mm-hmm. And one of them was, to change your life, to make huge changes, all you need is a small change in the direction. And over time, that small change will lead you so far apart of where your initial direction was
absolutely
going.
Absolutely true.
And the idea is that if you have two cars in two parallel lines, and one of them just takes a slight turn to the right, and they keep driving straight, the one that's slight turn to the right is going to be, you know, 100 miles from now, is going to be way the fuck away from that other one.
Totally.
And that's sometimes really how you have to look at it.
Yeah.
We especially, I mean, I'm a super impatient person. I want things now.
Me too, man.
You know, even when I go to the supermarket, I'm like, you bitches don't have any grass-fed beef?
Right.
Seriously?
Right.
But I mean, like, what? How preposterous is it that I think that I can just go to a place and they've killed an animal for me, raised it on grass only, killed an animal, and there's plenty of meat. I can feed my family. I can stay alive from this food here.
And this is the one
you're complaining
because they didn't get the shipment of organic meat that day. Well, think
about
it when
you have no grass-fed beef. Yeah. The fuck?
Well, what about when you're having a Skype conversation with somebody on the other side of the planet and you're just like taking for granted that you can see their face, that they can see yours, you know?
Yeah.
You're talking in real time for free
and
then like all of a sudden it might freeze. You're like, oh, God damn it, it's freezing.
Yeah.
Why is this freaking computer freezing? Why is... But like, think about what you were just enjoying 2 seconds before.
Yeah, I'm super
impatient. And you totally take it for granted. No, we assimilate, man. Hedonic adaptation.
Yeah, that is what it is. It is adaptation. You know, it's amazing though that we have this urge and this push to make things bigger, faster, quicker, and that urge and push is also responsible for one of the reasons why people get accustomed to things and want more.
Yeah, and you used to quote. You quoted McKenna, and you talked about how something about the astonishment. Do not give in to the astonishment.
Do not give in to astonishment.
Do not give in to it, but definitely seek it out.
Yeah,
because I think most people.
Well, he's talking about DMT though.
Yeah. But the truth in DMT, I mean, we should be able to see.
You ever had a DMT experience?
I have not. But don't you think that, for example, it's astonishing that you can do this podcast and reach 500,000 minds? And very rarely does one marvel at the astonishment of the things that occur every day that are miraculous. How many hundreds of thousands of aircrafts are flying through the air right now, communicating with one another, flying safely, individuals to other parts of the world? We don't experience that astonishment. I don't wake up in astonishment.
We should, yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, if you had pulled someone out of the caveman era and put him in modern society, it would be just as psychedelic as a lot of peyote trips.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be so bizarre and outside of the what you conceived of just seconds ago as being possible.
Right.
You know, you take someone from, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago, a blip in time means nothing to the universe, and then put him in today or put him in a goddamn movie theater, make him watch Harry Potter and shit his pants.
Right, shit his pants.
Can you imagine what a guy would do if he saw a fucking dragon, one of those Harry Potter dragons, blowing fire out, flying through the fire? He would just dive on the ground screaming in horror.
Right. And that is so amazing.
It's amazing.
And the fact that is. Like, we wake up in the morning, we don't think about that because that just is. We're on to the next thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. We're done and on to the next thing to be looking forward to or to be complaining about.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the part of our evolutionary makeup that makes us always probe the boundaries of the adjacent possible and always want to keep pushing. Because maybe if we were in astonishment of all we've done, we wouldn't keep progressing.
Well, we're obsessed with innovation. Yes. Human beings are obsessed with innovation.
Yes.
I mean, you know, every year sports cars get faster.
Yes.
You know, we're getting to a point right now where like regular cars are doing like racetrack numbers.
Yeah, it's insane.
You know?
Even though we have speed limits, even though we have that, like, we still push the performance to its limits.
I'm fascinated by sports cars because I'm fascinated by extreme engineering.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I'm fascinated by the idea that there's a bunch of people out there that are trying to get something that handles faster, has better geometry, moves better, sticks. And the newest Porsche 911 goes around the track as fast as the 996 Cup car. So the Nürburgring, which is like this really twisty, turny track in Germany, a really high-end sports car can go around it today at about 7 minutes, 30 seconds, 7 minutes, 40 seconds. That's like a 911, you know, like a real high-end car.
Yeah.
That's what race cars would do just a decade earlier.
Right.
So it's getting to this crazy point where regular modern street cars are like fucking cup cars.
It's insane.
So, and how much faster do you need these fucking things? Like, you know, Bugatti Veyron, they have a Bugatti Veyron. It's like 1,000 fucking horsepower.
Yeah, but we do it just to do it, man.
That's crazy.
Just to see how much complexity we can pack into it, how much performance we can get out of it. It's like modern jet engines, dude, operate at half the temperature of the surface of the sun. The
Jesus
core of a modern jet engine.
Christ.
It's insane, okay? It spins at 500 miles per... I mean, I don't remember the speed, but jet engines are really feats of engineering. I mean, it's dazzling.
Jets. I mean, you know, we everyone's scared of flying. Jesus Christ, there's 30,000 flights a day and nothing happens. It's incredible.
It's so safe.
It's amazing.
It's so safe.
Yeah, but the way you go is so terrifying. Just slamming into the fucking rainforest.
Well, that's why I love Virgin America so much, dude, because they got brand new planes. They really rock.
Yeah?
Brand new
state-of-the-art
fleet. Well, because most other airlines in this countries have fleets that are 20 to 25 to 30 years old.
Dude, you're scaring the fuck out of me
now.
I need to go on Virgin Airlines.
Listen, that doesn't make them any less safe. These planes are still certified and well-maintained.
I like how you covered your ass.
Nonetheless, on Virgin America, you're getting a brand new fleet of shiny state-of-the-art aircraft.
Pilot,
with the best of everything, with internet. No, you're not getting a brand new pilot.
You just say, dude, we're ready.
No, it's just, but it's nice. It's the year is 2012. You want to fly on an airplane that was manufactured, you know, in the last year or two or three. It's just, it makes you feel better when they're shiny. There's less stress fractures. It's just
fun. Kind of an interesting thing about air technology is that we essentially have the same tech. It's really one of the only industries that has the same technology, you know.
The same general principles, but the engines are far more reliable and far more advanced than they were before.
What? When did they start getting much better?
Oh, well, the same Moore's law that applies in computers. I mean, the engineering of a modern jet engine and the computers.
But aren't a lot
aircraft
of these jets from like the 1970s and 1980s?
Well, no, they make revisions that are pretty much like entire new models.
iPhone 1 still works.
The engines
they change everything.
Yeah, iPhone 1 will work as long as you don't update the software.
Right.
But it's kind of
it's more fun
though
to go on the new ones. They have far more technology in them.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know that robot dog? You know what that's going to be in the future?
What?
Check the screen out right here. How crazy is this? Somebody posted this on your message board, but hold on.
Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
No. Here we go.
Oh, my God.
That's
is that
the
real
robot.
That augmented reality placed in there or what?
Yeah. But imagine they're AT-ATs, you know, from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Those robot dogs are the exact same thing as an AT-AT.
Right. You're totally right. I mean, it looks exactly the same. Oh, so what is that? That's just they added that.
Yeah, somebody just put a funny video together.
There was a, yeah, well, that's amazing. You're totally right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
There's Brian's stupid fucking cat clock. How dare you?
Oh, is that the cat clock?
Yeah, that's the famous cat clock. He likes
very, very
cats.
Cool.
He likes things to meow. Yeah.
Future of medicine, man. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, well, I'm excited about the idea of keeping people alive long enough to figure out some really crazy shit.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of people staying long enough to overpopulate the planet kind of freaks me out, though. How do you think?
Well, I think that most
that
people cluster around only like 3% of the surface of the world, which is city states, like big
really?
Cities. Yeah. The world is still mostly
by
empty
the
space.
Water, right?
And it's mostly water. And technology is more like a resource liberating mechanism because scarcity is just contextual. Things are only scarce until you create technology that makes them into things that are abundant. People talk about water wars, but the minute.
So you're not worried at all about overpopulation?
No, man.
No.
Not at all. In fact, the more developed and educated people become, and in developed nations, the rate of having children goes down. Down significantly.
McKenna had
so
this,
the best cure against overpopulation is to educate and empower people and put more technology into their hands. But also, like desalinization, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, once we perfect that technology, this is called a blue planet. It's a
right.
water planet. It's
right.
mostly water. It just needs to be converted. But
do
like,
they have anything right now that can
there
do desalinization? Widespread?
Israel has a lot of desalinization plants. But
oh, yeah?
They just got to get more advanced. Just like solar panels. It's just exponential growth. Once they hit the tipping point where it's actually cheaper to use those technologies than to do it the other way, then it'll become the main thing.
Wow.
Desalinization.
But,
you know, yeah, but you need, to, you, know, you need to create. You need to create incentivize. You need to incentivize people to innovate. And
we're such cunts that we'll probably dry out the fucking ocean. We'll probably pull all the water out of the ocean.
No, I don't think we were.
Could you imagine? Can you imagine though? If we're so greedy, we use up all the water in the ocean. I mean, nobody predicted that we would have polluted the ocean the way we have in just 100 years. I mean, we've done an incredible
we'll
job of fucking
we'll
up the ocean.
Nanotechnology. We'll create synthetic biology.
You
algae
sure?
that eats the plastic, and we'll yes.
Where's the evidence of that ever having taken place in the past? When have we ever fixed anything?
There's an X Prize contest that the X Prize is doing to come to something with plastics, the technology to clean up oil spills or something like that.
Yeah, like bacteria that eats plastic.
Something like that. What it is, they create incentive by offering these prizes, like $10 million prizes, and teams around the world will spend $100 million to win a $10 million prize because of the prestige and because
Isn't
of the legacy.
Isn't that where Swamp Thing came from?
For what?
Swamp Thing. Remember the Marvel comic Swamp Thing?
From a contest?
No. From some pouring some biological shit to eat up some. Maybe I'm inventing.
Oh,
that.
I don't know.
Maybe it's another.
But you know, for example, that the X Prize, they were the ones that did the $10 million X Prize for space.
Yeah,
which became Virgin Galactic. Well, they have one now to create a device that's the size of like an iPhone called a tricorder. $10 million so you can make a device that you can spit on or you can put your blood on and that will diagnose you with the equivalent of 10 certified doctors. With greater accuracy than 10 certified doctors. I swear to God, this is their new contest. This is their net $2 million, $10 million prize that they just put out. Tricorder X Prize.
Is it possible to do that?
Of course
it's
going to be possible. I mean, they already have things that you can put on your iPhone that you can spit on that will like measure and analyze your fluids. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they already have that.
You spit on your iPhone and
well,
it gives you information.
Well, a thing that you attach to it, yeah.
What's it called?
I have no idea, but people can Google spitting on your iPhone medical device.
Wow, I never heard of that. That's
amazing. And that stuff is going to get a lot faster because now that biology is becoming information, mm-hmm. biology is an information technology, we're going to see the same progress.
Well, it is so
progress.
Cool when you have contests for good along those lines, like with XPRIZE and the fact that they would come up with something along that.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
Yeah, and I mean, I would love to believe you. I'd love to believe that someone's going to eventually figure out a way to get rid of that giant patch of garbage that's in the Pacific Ocean.
We shall.
Yeah.
We shall.
That's a big issue, huh?
Yeah. Well, people talk about that a lot. They're very concerned. Although yeah. it's not actually like the size of a country as people had said.
I think it's the size of Texas.
I don't think it actually is physically really? The size of Texas. Well, I think that they're so small.
No, I think how it is. It's all caught in the current. There's like a vortex.
Really?
And that's where all the garbage piles up. And then all the garbage. I'll look at it right now.
Hold okay.
Let me Google this real quick. Cool. Powerful Google. Pacific Ocean garbage patch.
Pacific Ocean.
Oh, it's fucking huge. Holy shit. Wow. Although many media and advocacy reports have suggested that the patch extends over an area larger than the continental U.S., recent research sponsored by the National Science Foundation suggests that the affected area may be twice the size of Hawaii.
Wow.
Wow. That's fucking big. But that's not a lot the size of Texas.
I'm pretty confident that we will create nanotechnology that will literally eat up the garbage. That's how we'll fix it.
But then when it runs out of garbage, then it'll be hungry and then it becomes Swamp Thing.
Maybe it'll become
it doesn't
want
to die, man. It doesn't want to die. And that's how, you know.
Yeah,
isn't
well,
that like the premise to a lot of comic book monsters?
It's a double-edged sword.
Fuck yeah, it is. We better come up with a way to kill those things before we feed them plastic.
Well, yeah. Yes, look, it's important to look at all the possible uses of technology for good and for bad. That's why the conversation needs to be had, though.
Let me ask you this.
The progress is not stopping. I think if we paint beautiful pictures of how things could be, we inspire the people to make sure that that's what we actualize.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I think, you know, the way you're doing it in videos and online is really cool. And it's very
Thanks,
positive.
Buddy. Well, the way you're doing it is amazing.
But my question to you is, what if we saw kangaroos evolving? What if we saw kangaroos, they had found some flower, there was a psychedelic flower, they started eating it, and kangaroos started building houses
yeah.
and whittling weapons and shit like that. And we saw some kangaroos welding.
Would we
allow out. That shit? You think we'd go in and kick the kangaroos' asses and go, get the fuck out of here with your armor?
We might make other animals smarter. Who knows?
Do you think so?
We might give them
But then we'd be battling for resources. I think we would just jack them.
No, because
we don't even want Iran to have nuclear power. What if the kangaroos came up with the nukes before Iran? What if kangaroos just started fucking being really super smart, man?
Yeah, well, but I don't think that the resources will be an issue because we'll be harnessing matter and energy from the whole galaxy. There's an infinity of resources.
You say that, but what if an asteroid lands in Australia right near where the kangaroos are and some spores from this asteroid contain a never-before-seen mushroom that rapidly accelerates evolution, and within like 100 years, they surpass us, and then kangaroos are smarter than us. What do you do then, Brian?
What if?
What are you going to do? You go with your fucking cat clock.
I'll create a time machine and take the words "what if" out of the dictionary.
Well, then I'm going to take a time machine and take the word "like" out, and you won't ever be able to say anything.
Whatever,
bitch. Listen, I believe that you are absolutely convinced that someone's going to come up with this. I just don't know.
Well,
I see it
happening, man, and
you
I know our brains.
What is the current plans to fix this now?
To fix which?
The garbage patch that we were talking about?
Yeah, well, they're talking about creating some kind of like algae or bacteria that eats the plastic. Yeah. I think one of the big guys of synthetic biology is Craig Venter, who also spoke at the Singularity University thing. And he was seeing in terms of the future of fuels and the future of like cleaning up like chemicals and absolutely going to be using synthetic biology.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we can program life to do whatever we want, you know, so we can... It's like,
so
you
truly
know, just like we can use
day.
Language to describe anything. We can just author instructions, you know. And here you have software that writes its own hardware. See, that's the thing about programmable life, unlike computers. You write the code manufactures its own, like, phenotype, right?
Because right.
life, the genes, determine its physical attributes. So the software writes its own hardware into existence. That's what's really exciting about, like, synthetic biology and programmable life.
Especially if you give some artificial intelligence access to 3D computers and 3D printers.
Oh, dude, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Things are going to get
Imagine
crazy.
Unlimited intelligence that replicates itself
yes.
and
yes.
3D printers.
Yes.
And but just the concept of 3D printers,
yes.
Having it aware of, oh, yes. now I can improve upon this design of
yes.
3D printers. doesn't
with
take
an
this
inf- with trillions instant. Of time more RAM than our brain.
Yeah, and instantaneously.
Well, like, you know what Henry
one
Miller
year
said?
Is like 10,000 years of progress.
And we need to believe that it's coming, man. Henry Miller said, "The day that men cease to believe that they will one day become gods, then they will surely become worms."
Wow,
that was Henry Miller. So he says. Believe mankind, you know, for going from ape to Superman, you know, smack in the middle in a trajectory between the born and the made.
Right.
That's where we are, man.
Yeah, we're in this weird stage.
We're in
stage.
The middle.
Yeah, this weird stage where we're sort of conscious and we're aware.
We're
waking
also
up. Animalistic and jealous right. and weird and yeah. savage, horny. Yeah.
We're going to turn ourselves into the most beautiful artwork we've ever made, man.
You really think so?
I definitely
or
think so.
Or the aliens land first.
Or the aliens land first.
So you don't believe that societies ever get to the point where they travel from one place to another land and affect things? That doesn't...
No, I think that they do, but the transcendent hypothesis says that by the time maybe they reach the edge of the solar system or the edge of the galaxy, at that point, all the density goes back and it goes inwards into the nanoscale. So it's kind of like the complexity kind of goes into itself and goes and makes a black hole and disappears from the visible universe.
Is it possible that...
People should look up the transcendent hypothesis because it'll probably explain much better than I can.
But isn't it possible that what you're dealing with is something that's here all the time, but it's in another dimension? Is it possible?
Hyperdimension string theory. Yeah, I mean that is addressed in that article. Yeah. So so you could even go back to McKenna and say, oh, so when McKenna talks about hyperdimensional beings and well, the transcendent hypothesis says essentially our minds, yes, will break through the visible universe into other dimensions. It's like crazy stuff, except it's like written by an academic scholar.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no aliens and flying saucers just landing.
Yeah, that's what he says. He says, well, yeah, we'll go to other planets, but that's like early stage stuff. Like going to other planets over the next like 50 years, you know, that's early
stage. So if
we ever
get invaded, we're essentially invaded by young punks. That the really high level aliens wouldn't bother invading
us. Right, totally.
You know, every time you do that, the microphone picks it up.
Sorry, man.
It's fine. It's good. But, you know, someone's going to be upset. Yeah, people, I'm sensitive because people always complain. I used to chew gum. Can't chew gum on the mic anymore. People are like, dude, you're fucked. And sipping, can't sip drinks. If you get up here, people get mad. What you got to think of is someone. That's the reason why we put headphones on. Like, we would easily do this conversation.
Yeah.
But if you were in the gym right now, you would hear that.
Sorry, gym guys.
No, please. Sorry, everybody. Just want to keep everybody happy. I mean, this is all incredible stuff. And I guess it all could come true and come to fruition as long as we don't fuck it up or as long as some gigantic natural disaster doesn't happen as well, right?
Yes.
Do you ever take any care or in consideration?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's...
Super volcanoes, shit like that?
I think, look, we have to be paying attention and we have to be cautious and we have to be... You know, vigilant as we transition towards what promises to be the most exciting time in human history. I mean, we're already living in the most exciting time in human history, but let's not lose focus, you know? Like, let's address the grand challenges of humanity. We've never had such tools with which to do so. And I think it's like an opportunity for us to pool our mental cognitive surpluses together and fix shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think we'll ever get to the point where we can avoid asteroids?
Sure.
You think so?
Yeah.
Shoot them down.
Yeah, we'll get
shoot them down, you think?
Shoot them down with lasers.
Yeah, destroy
them. A single laser would blow it up. Everything is turning into Star Wars.
Yeah.
You really think the enemy will do that, though? I mean, some asteroids are miles wide.
We already have lasers that are pretty powerful. I mean...
Send nuclear weapons to them, like in the movie Sunshine.
Well, no, the issue with that is actually that it makes it worse, because what happens is instead of one big impact, you have hundreds of thousands of impacts.
Little ones.
Well, they're not even little. You know, you don't need anything that big to make that giant crater in Nevada. You know, it's one of the weird things about all planets. I mean, every planet we find is littered with impacts. Mm. You know, we live in a very volatile solar system.
Well, we've been inhabiting the Goldilocks space for the Goldilocks amount of time. And we've just been very, very lucky. Like I said, we've been talking about this. All of our progress, man, is a blink of a blink of a blink of a blink of a blink in terms of cosmic time. So it's like, it's not that we're lucky, but it hasn't been that much time that has passed.
Give
a couple million years and the inevitability of getting hit is coming. That's why we got to progress so that we can thwart that.
Well, they just found a very recent evidence of an impact, a big one, about 13,000 years ago. And what's really fascinating about that is all the ancient history theorists all point to that point in time as one being the end of the Ice Age, like around that time, the end of the Pleistocene. And also that's when a lot of people point to the possibility of like an ancient civilization like Egypt falling apart and then rebuilding in the same area.
Sure.
When they hypothesize that something went wrong, it's always around 10,000, 12,000, 13,000, somewhere around there.
Cycles?
The idea is that, you know, human life on this planet, like the reason why there's the myth of Atlantis and the myth of Noah and the Ark and the Epic of Gilgamesh, is that there's all these giant disasters just that frequently hit, you know, and you know, if something hit us today and wiped out, we're
wired to look for danger, man. That's the only way we survive. So cautionary tales embedded in our culture are just alarm systems.
Sure. You know? They're just and it's kind of a race. I mean, it's kind of a race between technology, awareness, progress, and the ability to at least predict and prepare slightly for natural disasters. Yeah. But some of them, like caldera volcanoes and things along those lines, this is nothing you can do, man. Right. There's just nothing you can do. When it goes, it goes. Unless you can figure out a way to throw some ice cubes on the lava.
Maybe.
Keep it from fucking blowing sky high.
Nanotechnology is the only way I think that could be addressed, you know? That really is the craziest technology. Yeah. I mean, self-replicating things on a nanoscale. It's like
matter. So do you think that you'd be able to throw those into the lava and they would somehow or another chill everybody the fuck out?
Yeah, change the structure of the molecular structure of the lava. I don't know.
What if that fucking freezes up the planet and turns us into another ice age? Well, Jesus Christ, Jason Selva, what are you doing?
The butterfly effect issue is always...
it is, right? We don't
know.
Careful,
yeah. Well, no, we'll have supercomputers that can map out every possible possibility trillions of times more than we can map out different scenarios in our heads. So those AIs will be able to pick the best scenario. They'll make mathematical projections and they'll be like, okay, there's 1,000,000,001 probabilities of this is the best one. Let's do it.
You spend so much time thinking about the future and thinking about all these possibilities. Is it possible that when you do this, or is it difficult when you do this, not to ignore the present? Is it hard to, you know, is it like a sort of a normal thing to sort of ignore the present where you're concentrating entirely on what the human race is going to accomplish?
Yeah,
and what
I think that, you know how they say that.
I didn't phrase that very well, but you know.
No. I think, you know how they we always talk about how human beings need a purpose. Yeah. And a purpose, by its very nature, implies a reason to look forward.
Right.
So we can't help but look to the future. It's what we do.
So your purpose is to create a purpose and to put the idea of purpose into people's
heads.
What
gives me a sense of purpose is a collective feeling that, like, wow, humanity has this unique opportunity to sort of map its road beautifully, and we all have a way of participating in that. And what a wonderful sense of collective purpose. It's more interesting to me than like, oh, well, my purpose is to become, you know, or get this job or do this thing. It's like, yeah, I want to get this job and do this thing just like everybody else because I want to survive. But I'm in the mood for cosmic purpose, cosmic significance. That's, you know,
you're a cosmic dick slinger. Did I say that?
It's the same reason that religion always appealed to people, for the same reason that man can live for a few weeks without food, a few days without water, but not for a second without hope. It's just the human condition. You know, the minute we lose hope, we commit suicide.
Not the minute. Sometimes you could really suffer for years before you pull the plug.
But when you lose complete hope, you might not even wait around. If you're waiting around, it becomes you have a little bit of thing of thinking that things might turn around. Yeah. So I think it's important. I think it's important to look forward. I think it's huge. I think it's the only thing that propels our progress anyway, because if we were in a stupefied lull staying in the present, we wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, of course. What do you see happening in your lifetime? I mean, we are right now in 2012. This is supposed to be, if you're paying attention to time wave zero novelty theory, this is supposed to be when the shit hits the fan. Well, you know what I found recently? I mean, I've talked about this recently, but I wanted to bring it up with you because I know you're a McKenna fan as well. He altered the end date to coincide with the end date of the Mayan calendar.
Yeah, maybe he was of the people that believe that by creating a social movement around these ideas, you more quickly actualize those ideas.
People were so upset at me for bringing this up, but somebody had posted it on my message board, and then I went and read, and apparently his initial calculations was November of 2012.
And then he moved it to December?
Moved it to December 21st, which is the end date of the long count. But then somebody brought up the other day, there was like an internet meme going around where, you know, calculate leap years. Did the Mayans calculate leap years? Because if they didn't, you know, all this shit all happened 700 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The specifics, I have no idea what the science is. But I think what's interesting is that if you create a viral swell 10 times the scale of the Joseph Kony video with some beautifully produced message about how mankind is using technology to create a global brain and address the problems of humanity, and it's seen by a billion people by December on YouTube, then the idea becomes reality, because this is what we've been talking about. You know, ideas are just as real as the neurons that they inhabit. So that's what's crazy. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, the Joseph Kony video, I mean, we talked about this, but I remember when it hit Twitter, when I saw it, when I saw it starting to appear in my timeline, I started thinking, wow, what's going to happen here? Like, this is this seems like a very orchestrated campaign.
Yeah.
And the idea to make a terrible person very famous so that he's a target.
Vilified more, yeah.
What a genius idea.
Genius.
And, you know, that really is just sort of tapping into potential, tapping into, which no one else has done before. No one else has ever done that about a terrible person.
Yeah. No, it's very,
yeah, it's interesting. Right. It's so interesting.
It's brilliant. And just the use of media and understanding its power and applying it for savvy social impact.
What are the criticisms of this Kony video? Because I know there's a few.
No, the criticism, I think, has to do specifically with the nonprofit operations details. But look, again, that's something, that's a whole other conversation. And we're not experts and we don't know the facts. But I think what's interesting is what they've made with the video and what that video means about the future of how messages get spread.
Yeah.
That we're seeing, we all know where we were when the Kony video hit.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like something has changed here.
Yeah.
And we're all aware that, okay, this is a new paradigm.
And within a week, man.
It's a paradigm shift.
A week. Not even
a paradigm shift. You know what's really fascinating is the Obama campaign is releasing, this is where they're so social media brilliant, savvy, they understand aesthetics in that campaign. They had the director of An Inconvenient Truth is about to release a documentary. So like a well-made film about Obama. And that's going to be part of their campaign media materials. So instead of like an ad, like a normal attack ad like the other guys are doing, no, these guys are releasing a film made by a talented filmmaker. I mean, the brilliance of that.
That's pretty smart.
And that's probably going to go ridiculously viral. That's the best campaign video you could have ever done.
When is that going to come out?
I don't know the dates, but people should Google the Who Knew About.
I wonder if it's going to be like
a trailer.
I wonder if it's going to be free or like Louis C.K.
I wonder if it's going to be like a Kim Kardashian reality TV show where you know that they've created artificial scenarios to move the plot along.
Yeah, like Obama's. Right, Obama, we got you at a car wash now.
Obama's like, Mexican food. I don't want Mexican food.
Now you're going to be washing the car.
Could you imagine if they actually did it? They produce it like a reality show.
Yeah,
would that be the most ridiculous shit ever?
I haven't seen it. I wonder what it's going to be. Something tells me it's going to be a well-made film with beautiful music and.
Well, it'd be nice to see him talk outside of that fake sort of.
Right.
I'm giving a speech voice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It should be like a documentary that followed him, and you get the behind the scenes.
Well, the fake I'm giving a speech voice is very disturbing because it's too smooth. It's not real. It's too polished. It's not. It's not. You know, I know it's prepared and beaten down to. I don't want that out of a leader.
Yeah.
You know what I want out of a leader is I want to know that this is you. This isn't I'm being a strip club DJ. This isn't I'm the AM morning guy on the zoo. Coming up next, the same fucking voice when you hear a man give a speech. And that, you know, there's that way of talking that is so goddamn fake, it should be illegal. They should be able to stop you from making campaigns and speeches and you can't talk like that.
It'll be interesting to see how it comes across. And speaking of politicians, did you see the HBO movie about Game Change?
What is it? What's Game Change?
It's about the McCain.
You know, about Sarah Palin?
Yeah, when he picked his running
mate. I can't watch any more Sarah Palin stuff.
Well, Julianne Moore was so good in it, dude.
She's pretty hot.
She looks just like her.
Yeah, but like the film is so upsetting. And,
really?
Well, because it shows you the theater of what a lot of politics has become. Well, and also how obsolete it is. And how
accurate is it? Accurate is the conversations? I mean, it's all been doctored up for fucking dramatic effect.
I don't know. You need to see it, man. I think
when they bookend conversations,
you still get the message. You still get the idea of the reasons that she was put there,
right?
And her lack of experience.
Yeah.
And,
well, that became painfully obvious,
right? But here it's presented in the way it would be like a film scholar, you know, explaining something to you.
Well, to me, it just illustrates how wonky the system is.
Right.
That could even be an option.
How could that be an option? Exactly.
How can it be
Why
an option
Why do we as a society would allow something like that?
Well, you know, it's what I've always said is the real problem is that there's really fucking dumb people out there, a lot of them, and they get to vote too.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with dumb people is they don't know they're dumb. So when they see someone like Sarah Palin, who may not be the smartest person in the world, but she's way smarter than them, they can't distinguish between her and Stephen Hawking. When Neil Tyson speaks, he sounds just as brilliant as Sarah Palin because they're both way out of their fucking league. Most people can barely string together a sentence. And so these are the people that cling to her because she represents simplicity. She represents,
I think, today
good old-fashioned things and hunting and family and God.
There's a safe danger with her. She's dangerous, but she's also familiar. And so maybe that's why. But, like, fuck, I feel like today, man, if you have access to the internet, you have no excuse not to be on Khan Academy. You have no excuse not to be watching TED Talks. You have no excuse not to saturate your brain with knowledge. Like, it's not like there's no books around. Like, every book that's ever been written is an internet click away. And I feel like ignorance is inexcusable these days if you have an internet connection. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like, it feels like, you know, the tools are there, but it's up to us how we use them. It goes back to the same message, and I think people really, they need to get on this, right? Yeah. They need to get on this.
The representative government idea has got to go. That's not necessary anymore. We can all instantly communicate with the government. We can instantly decide what we agree with or don't agree with.
We can have our voices heard
already.
Yeah,
the idea that we have senators and congressmen and that, you know, they're in this position where they get to vote for their districts. Shut the fuck up.
Fascinating idea, yeah.
That's a ridiculous idea. That's not even, that's not, see, everybody looks at it at democracy as if, like, you get a say, you get to vote. But you don't get a say in shit. You get a say in who you pick, who gets you in a position, but
democracy needs to come online, man. Like, the whole thing
100%
needs to
be revamped. Yeah. They need to throw out all representation.
Crowdsource. Yeah. The internet needs to be vote on new constitutional amendments.
Should be people who have jobs, but those jobs are to carry out the will of the people, not to represent the people. The people can represent themselves now.
When is somebody going to make a Joseph Kony-style video about legalizing marijuana? And if people say, click here and play this to say yes, and if it gets a billion views, they'll have to legalize
it. You could already see, just Google The Union, man. Go watch the movie The Union, the business behind getting high. It's a documentary that I was involved in that my friend Adam Scorgi produced. It was like, I don't know, it was like 4 or 5 years ago at least that we did this. It was one of the best documentaries on the reality behind the illegalization of marijuana and the reality behind how big of a business it is and how many fucking people use it.
Dude, but I have I have members in my family that benefit from its medicinal use, and they benefit immensely. It's been like a miracle for my aunt.
Well, it's one of those plants, one of those substances, one of those elements of our culture and society that if you were looking at life as a work of fiction, if life was a movie and there was some plant in the movie that was incredibly beneficial, not just to the culture, not just to instilling a sense of camaraderie in people, not just for making you inquisitive, a turbocharger for your imagination, making sex feel better, not just all of these things, but then it creates a superior fiber that you can make clothes out of that's way more durable than cotton. It makes a much more superior paper, and you could put it in an area and it can, in 4 months, it can be ready to process, whereas it takes fucking years to grow trees in the same area. Plus, it outproduces the trees in the same acreage by something like 4 to 1. I mean, it's amazing. It has the amino acids that you can live off of. You can use it to make fuel. You can make hemp oil. I mean, it becomes preposterous.
Preposterous. But imagine a video that's slickly produced like the Kony video that gets a billion views.
Let's do it. Let's do it. You and me, dude. 10 minutes.
Let's do
it. We'll pump it up on Twitter.
The new bill in California, a DUI bill, that they're going to make it zero tolerance DUI if you have any weed in your system or any marijuana. And marijuana usually stays in your system days.
6 weeks.
How could they do that? That's like saying punishing you for being drunk 2 days ago.
So it would pretty much make anyone that smokes weed.
Well, that's silly.
They'd have to get
a urine test from you. You wouldn't be able to blow it.
That's what they would be allowed to do if they pulled you over.
Oh, that's so ridiculous. That's, you know, the real problem with that is the science is not the same. Marijuana does not treat people or doesn't affect people the same way that alcohol does, period.
Way.
I'm not saying you should go out and get high and drive around, but I'm saying some people can drive high and they're fine, and that is a fact. You know, and you might not want to address it because it seems like it's a taboo subject and, you know, people want to dance around it. It is not getting drunk. Getting drunk is something that really severely impairs your ability to operate machines, your ability to walk, your coordination.
They're very different things.
Very, very, very different.
Personally,
and it's not a good idea to be in any altered state of consciousness while you're responsible for other people's
lives. We get the self-driving cars. Yeah. That's why the Google self-driving cars are so perfectly.
So you can be baked as fuck in your Google car. Just your Google car could be Cheech and Chong to the max.
Yes.
Just completely. completely filled with smoke. So they open up those side go-wing doors. Why not? Google everybody gets a contact
cars.
High.
Yes, and it'll be the self-driving car. It's perfectly safe. The computer doesn't get high.
Dude, you're a Google fanboy a little bit, right?
I'm kind of a fan of anybody who's pushing the boundaries of the possible, dude.
Of course.
Yes.
I'm a Google fanboy.
Yes.
I'm Lycos all the way.
Whoa, bro. I'm Netflix. Netflix, sir.
People
who have the courage to dream.
Net.
What was the other one?
Netscape.
No, goddammit. Netscape. That's
your browser.
Yeah. Remember Netscape?
Yeah.
The Netscape search?
You should do Netscape an internet search?
Yeah, there was like a search part of it, I think. Does that make sense?
I thought it was always a browser. I didn't know they had.
Well, there was. What were the earliest search engines before Google? There was. That wasn't the first.
There was.
No,
I always used
search
web
engines.
Web crawler.
Alta Vista. I remember Alta Vista.
Remember Alta Vista.
Hotbot.
Yeah. Hotbot. I don't remember.
Lycos.
I remember Lycos.
MSN.
So how did those go away, and how did Google just storm the beach?
They out-innovated, man.
Out-innovated
is like natural selection. It's like winning.
Because
it's like winning the game. Winning.
Microsoft is trying so hard with this whole Bing thing. First of all, why Bing? What does that mean? What are you saying?
It's Google.
I don't know.
Bing.
You know, that's not bad. It's probably the second best one.
It's pretty good, but why Bing? Why are you calling it Bing?
Why is it Google?
Why is Google? Because a Google is a number, dude.
It's a very cool number, actually. Oh, I didn't know that until recently. Yeah. It's like a term for
it's a gigantic
quadrillion.
Yeah, it's like a million zeros or some shit.
Oh, I didn't
well,
know.
Let's find out what it is. What is a Google here? Because we should inform
What's a
people.
Googler?
It comes from another term. I don't believe it. The word is Google. It's an abbreviation of a term. Yeah, Google. It's G-O-O-G-O-L. Yeah.
And
it is, holy shit.
How many?
Oh, my God. 100 zeros. It is the, wow, a Google is the large number 10 to 100. That is the digit 1 followed by 100 zeros.
What a great way to make a statement about the depth and breadth of your capabilities by using a number like that. It's kind of beautiful.
And how perfect.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
A perfect description.
It's perfect.
For Google? That is Google, man.
Yeah.
Google voicemail, Google fucking maps, Google... Jesus.
That's why I'm so excited to speak there.
Yeah, what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about creativity. I'm going to talk about innovation. I'm going to talk about inspiration and awe. I'm going to talk about using technology to render the impossible into existence, and I'm going to show some of the videos. Actually, my friend, Josh Kaplan, actually, who set this up, is a huge fan of your show.
Oh, that's awesome,
man. He loves your podcast.
What's up, Josh?
Yes, he's
what,
the man.
What?
And he set up the invite to Google, so thank you to him, man.
That's incredible. You know, Google is known as being one of those companies that really treats their employees well.
Yeah,
you know, that's like, we got an invite a couple years ago when we were in San Francisco, maybe a year ago or something. Someone from Google emailed me, but I lost it in the shuffle. My email gets clogged sometimes, and I just can't find anybody.
Because you get a lot of crazy... You must get a lot of emails in general,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, but the one thing that I was fascinated by, I wanted to see what it was like in there, because I've always thought, like, man, why can't someone make a company where they treat their employees well? Like, how much more does it cost to give them really good food, take care of them? It might cost, like, a little more, but wouldn't make the atmosphere way better and make everybody appreciate it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the most important things is that the environment be positive.
Totally.
Nobody wants to work around someone who doesn't want to work there.
And they also understand that creativity and productivity comes from allowing people to have distractions.
Yes.
So it's like they have ping pong tables
right.
And beanbag and all these things because, you know, and some people might criticize, oh, it's just a playground. Actually, no. It probably makes the employees much more creative. You're creating spaces in which the free association and their synapses can fire. And that's creativity is about that. It's about
changing
things up. And I'm
sure they're judged or at least evaluated based on their productivity.
Right.
It's not like they're not going to be productive.
Exactly.
And I got this job.
Yeah.
Time to just play ping pong all day.
Right.
They're not the type of people that would do that in the first place.
Right.
So it becomes a resource rather than a
Brilliant.
Distraction. And a distraction as a resource. Yeah.
And these are the post-industrial revolution companies.
Yeah.
And these are the most admired companies in the world. You have Apple, you have Google, and people are looking to these companies as examples of how to run businesses, how to have social impact, how to make legacies, how to not be evil.
And they stood out against
SOPA. This is the new model against of corporations are going to be judged upon. So all these new entrepreneurs now coming online, they're getting inspired from these companies.
Right.
Like, I want to be in the next Google and change the world. It's not I want to make the next Google and be rich.
Now
I want to change the world.
Now, what happens with like Google Video and stuff? Because I know they came out against SOPA and the Stop Online Piracy Act, and they kind of that all fell apart. And trying to come up with like a new strategy, a new act.
Well, I think we need to all have a new conversation about content ownership in a world in which everybody has the tools to make mixtapes.
So, yeah, but like what about Google Videos and stuff like that? What if someone has a documentary and that documentary is for sale, but you go to Google Video and there it is and you can just watch it for free? What is
you do what Radiohead did, which is where they put their album online for free, and they said donate money if you would like to pay for this music. But if you don't,
so you think that that's how people who want to sell DVDs should deal with the fact that people are stealing their shit? They're going to have to ask for donations?
Well, no, but I think that we're just, it's an environment because a lot of because what happens is everybody's going to be making content for free anyway, right. And the content for free is going to be just as good as the content you charge for. And I think people will pay because they appreciate your content. But I think it's going to be harder and harder to like impose payment on it.
Well, how would someone, like, let's say, for an example, say if there's a documentary on crocodiles, okay, I tell you about it. Oh my God, it's crazy. You got to watch this. Now you go to Google Video and you find this documentary on crocodiles. How the fuck are you going to find the production company, the website? Are you going to search it out? Are you going to go Google the name of it? And then,
so you're saying you would just watch it on
the website?
Watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, if you really wanted to, well, if they had it set up where you could, you know, where you could donate if you would like on their website. I mean,
Well, no, they can. So they can do a YouTube channel that's supported by ads. And if lots of people watch the movie, they'll get money from the ads that they have on their page. And then they, in the description, they can say, we're putting this movie online for free because we want to share the ideas, but we're asking for donations of $5 a view. And I'm sure that a lot of people would give it.
A lot of people would. A lot of people wouldn't as well, though. Do you feel like that is? And then there's the other argument is the people that wouldn't as well. I kind of see their point of view because they would say, listen, I would have never bought this in the first place, so I'm not taking anything away from them. Right. I downloaded it because it was free, because I knew I could watch it, and I didn't like it. So I'm glad they didn't get my
enough.
Money.
When you see a bad movie, don't you want to get your money back?
Yes. I mean, I can see that argument as well, you know? I mean, it is a weird thing when it's ones and zeros and it's just being distributed through the internet. Yes. It's a weird conversation.
Because things only have a price because of scarcity.
Right.
You charge for something because it's a rare commodity.
Well, no, but it also things have a price because you I mean, like, there's no scarcity in artwork. I mean, you're not when you go to a
comedy
club.
No, but in your unique work is yours unique. So people pay for it because it's only you did something that's unique to you, and if you have an audience, people will pay for that. That's what I'm saying. But I think that increasingly
scarcity
itself, but
you're compensating them for their efforts. I mean, it's not necessarily just paying for scarcity. It's you're compensating someone honestly
because
for their efforts.
Because you appreciate the efforts. But I think that it's just the genie's out of the bottle. It's just too difficult for immaterial things to be contained.
Do you think that ultimately that's going to lead to sort of a decay in the idea of capitalism, and that, you know, and the
everything is
going to
be re-examined.
Things.
Everything is going to be re-examined.
Like when they start getting into like real high-end 3D printers, and that's how you order things. You just order the formula.
Transform manufacturing as well, man.
Yeah,
yes.
And then those
people will get scared and lose their jobs, and will have moments of panic, and all of that transition.
Yeah.
Will change everything. But you know that like 80% of the jobs that people do today didn't exist 100 years ago.
Yeah,
there were jobs that didn't exist. So there will be new things for us to do.
It becomes a real problem when people hold on to the idea that they need to keep a job and because the job is a part of the old way. And that is also one of the reasons why marijuana is still illegal.
Yeah.
And there was a recent article that I tweeted, if you find it, just a couple of days ago, or just Google the statement, lobbyists are getting rich off keeping marijuana illegal, because that's what's going on, man.
Right.
There's lobbyists that are doing this through police unions. You know, there's lobbyists that are doing this, and they're you know, these guys are making a lot of money off keeping marijuana illegal. There's a lot of people that their business. Yeah, well, their business is to arrest people for pot. I mean, that's part of the job. You know, it's part of what keeps people paid.
Yeah.
It's part of what keeps a strong police force.
But I think that in a country where most of the population at this point wants it to be legalized, there should be no red tape or bureaucracy between the people's will and it being changed.
I think it's
most people want it to be legalized. There should be like a like button on Facebook, and if 100 million people click it, it should be legalized tomorrow.
And I think that will eventually.
Months. Yeah, that's dynamic democracy.
I think
this
that
is
will
what we
eventually.
Need to get to.
But I think one of the issues is, and I think this has to be stopped, is we have to stop treating police officers as glorified revenue collectors, because that's what they are. And I think that's a really disgusting thing, because guess what? Firefighters are in place, and I hope we never have to fucking use them. I hope those guys get to hang out at the firehouse all day and cook and work out and do fucking chin-ups and shit.
Right.
And I hope no one ever has to work.
Right.
I hope no one ever has to deal with a fire. I would like the same thing with police officers.
Right. It would be great if they never had to take their guns out.
The issue is they have quotas. They have quotas they have to reach.
I had
no
idea.
Oh, fuck yeah. Especially with speeding. You know, I've talked to friends that
they
are
cops.
They have
quotas?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they have to make quotas as far as giving out tickets.
Well, that really raises a red flag, doesn't
it?
That's like telling a firefighter that you're only going to get paid if you put out a fire. Well, so imagine, they're going to be looking to build fires.
Imagine what would happen if the entire country decided that for 1 month, which would fuck up the entire system, that's all we need is 30 days, everybody in agreement, where nobody ever violates a single law as far as speeding or driving or traffic or stoplights.
If we made a viral video for it and we created a campaign.
Every cop would get
fired. Don't break a law for a month.
Every cop would get fired. It would be chaos.
Wow.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. They would lose all that revenue that they count on. They count on us never evolving. I mean, it's really factored into the budget.
Dude, we need massive system upgrades here.
Massive system upgrades. Just the idea that you have engineered a system where we can never be good. We can never get through because your cops need to arrest a certain amount of people, need to pull over, rather, a certain amount of people and put out a certain amount of tickets. The state relies on that for revenue.
Yeah, no, we're going to have to radically change. Everything will radically change, you know, but there was a time when, you know, somebody's life was about making saddles for horses, you know, because everybody rode horses, and that person was probably really nervous when the car started to become popular because he couldn't make his horse carriages anymore.
Lucky for him, lesbians are still around. And they still like horses. I wouldn't say lesbians. I'd say women who used to like men but gave up. Now they like horses.
I don't know, man. I live right in the equestrian district, and I see them every day, and then some of them are fucking hot. Like these are like spoiled little girls that date like rich guys that buy like the models and shit.
Yeah, you got to fuck those girls hard, man. They ride horses all day. They're used to. They're not impressed by just like regular sex. Riding a giant animal all day, you must feel so feeble.
Yeah.
You know? You know what I'm saying? They get on top of you. They're like, really? This is it? This is all you got here?
Next level of masturbating.
I don't know. I always feel bad for the horses, man. There's chains around their mouths. Yeah, I'm like, no, man. I'd rather, I don't like it.
It's gross. It's gross. There's a lot of people in my neighborhood, and they're like super self-righteous. Like, you know, slow down. You could be like, it's 28 miles. You know, the speed limit is 25. You're going 28. Slow down. Slow down. Just big, big bull dyke on her fucking crazy animal. It's a weird thing that you're allowed to just ride around animals in 2012. Someone should come along and you go, really? Just go to a farm somewhere. You can't be just, you know, I don't care if this is an equestrian district. That's ridiculous. It's still Burbank, you crazy fuck. What are you doing riding a horse in my neighborhood? Get out of here.
Well, soon we won't eat animals either. I'm really? Convinced. That's I'm convinced nonsense. About in vitro meat, man.
Well,
tissue engineering.
Someone's going to have to eat those fucking animals. That's a problem because what happens then? Do we sterilize them? What do we do to keep them from just being everywhere like in India? What's it, you know, what is it like if you drive everywhere and there's fucking cows or like rats in New York City just infesting the landscape and we can't eat them? Someone's going to have to kill him, bro. We're going to have to introduce Triceratops.
Well, maybe we won't have to
dinosaurs.
We won't breed as many. I mean, that's another option.
What if we just let them go, right? If we let them go. Yeah. We're not eating them anymore. We let them go. They're going to fuck. They're going to fuck, and they're going to be like buffalo.
We'll
buffalo on the plains.
We'll just grow the tissue without
they're
going to
be everywhere.
System.
Oh, man. I don't know. I think if we want to stay human, I think they're going to keep breeding. I think we're going to have to get predators. We're going to have to make some robot predators, like those dog robot things that only just go out and jack cows.
Interesting.
They just do it to keep the population down.
Who knows, man? And it's going to be you know,
Brian just shook his head.
We'll have to
I said something too ridiculous for Brian.
The new scenario. No, the new scenarios will come and we'll find new novel solutions to
eat
deal
meat?
With them.
Do you eat meat?
I eat meat, not every day, but I'm a flexitarian.
A flexitarian? You're flexible?
I eat meat, but I try not to eat it every day.
Do you ever consider the idea that what you're doing is harmful to the energy of the universe, that you're, you know, eating tortured animals? Does that ever fuck with you? You ever watch, like, Food Inc.? Or
I try to have organic food, but I still, you know...
That's like a cow that grows up in a hippie community and then gets shot in the head.
I don't know.
Still gets jacked.
I would like to become vegetarian. It's just, it's not the easiest thing to do logistically, you know?
Yeah.
Now you can't always find.
Right now, you're going to get a swarm of hate mail from sweaty little vegans and vegetarians. They're warming up their little fingers right now.
Well, I'm a flexitarian. I mean, not
Jason
eating vegan.
I thought you were an open-minded person.
Eating vegan food
you.
Twice a week is already really good. You're making, it's a beginning.
That's decent.
The beginning.
Twice
a week? Are you?
No, I eat meat. Yeah. I think animals are dumb, and I think if they were smart, they would be killing us. I think we'd have issues. I think every animal on this planet is an animal.
But hopefully we get to the
animal.
Point where our empathy is big enough to alleviate
compete.
Suffering, even suffering if it's not completely,
I agree.
Completely
However,
as conscious as
the
we
cycle
are.
Of life requires predators, and we have sort of completely hijacked that cycle of life with the idea of cities and civilization and big metal boxes where we can drive through a fucking safari and be 10 feet away from a lion killing a gazelle. I mean, we got a crazy
We're game
reality.
Changers, man. We're game-changing species. For good or for bad,
yes.
I think more for good. I'm more impressed with us than I am disturbed by us. By a long shot.
Much more impressed with us than I am disturbed.
But
as
it's
well.
Nice to just kind of to marvel at ourselves a little bit. I think we have kind of a guilty cosmic complex where we feel like we're small and insignificant. And I think we have a big role to play. But we can play an even bigger role if we pool our cognitive resources together.
I agree. But I also agree that bacon is delicious, and so is steak. And
You can grow bacon out of like stem cells and not have to kill another animal. Print out some bacon.
You're never going to be able to recreate venison. You're never going to be able to recreate wild venison. No, venison is deer meat.
Oh, okay.
You could totally recreate that.
You could. Bro. There's a delicious, gamey, wild flavor to animals
have that, shit
that run away.
Ones and zeros.
Do you think they'll be able to figure that out?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, man. It'll be like in The Matrix when the guy's eating the steak and he's like, I know this is not real. I know it's made of like code. Right.
Yeah.
But he's like, I don't care. It tastes delicious. And then he puts it in his mouth.
So you're going to be satisfied with that?
I think we all would.
It's inevitable, right? Yeah. It's inevitable.
Well, dude, I mean, what are we tasting anyway except our brain's interpretation of something going in through senses that are like creating a software that goes in real time and tells us, oh, this is what this feels like.
I'm glad I got to experience life with no answering machines. I'm glad I got to experience no cell phones when I was growing up.
So you could see the contrast?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Does it make you appreciate how wired you are now?
I appreciate how wired we are now, but I also appreciate old school stuff. I appreciate a good steak. You know, I like a good steak, hardwood coals,
stop talking
grilled.
About food.
Hey man, hungry? Cooking. Hey man, so cooking hungry. With fire. Cooking with fire was a technology too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean look, the appendix exists. It was an organ to break down fibers. I mean, we were eating all kinds of crazy shit back then, right? Know. Wasn't it? I mean, wasn't that what it was?
And then we lost its use, and that's why a lot of people have to have it removed.
Have you ever gotten your genome tested to see what percentage Neanderthal you are?
23andMe.
The Google thing?
Yeah, that's the thing we were talking about. Yeah.
And
what they say?
It's not completely... I mean, it's not like they can understand everything yet.
Someone's a monkey and doesn't want to... Yeah. It's trying to downplay the technology.
Yeah. No. Well, and it's one of those exponential things where eventually it'll be 100% tell you everything about everything.
Do you have to
But right
spit
now,
in
at least
cup?
It tells you...
Did you spit in a cup or something like that?
You
what do you? How do you do it? What do you do?
They send you this little tube and you spit
in it
and you mail
it to them.
Yeah, 23andMe. It's amazing. No, it'll tell you if you have like a pre... a precondition of some sorts, or if you have a likelihood of developing something like high blood pressure, if your genetic profile says you're going to get Parkinson's, or the percentages of a chance of developing something. So for people who get stuff that's preventable, you know, if they're like, oh, I have a 70% chance of high blood pressure, well, I can start addressing that now. Wow. I've been told that I'm more likely to get it than another person, so I can change my diet now. Because some people are just genetically so lucky that they can eat shit and nothing will ever happen to them.
Those motherfuckers.
Yeah, that's always the case until we all upgrade our genes. But for everybody else, this is a chance to see what some of their vulnerabilities might be and how they might address them. So we start to hack our biology. How cool is this idea? That we're hacking our biology. We're upgrading ourselves by hacking in and getting backdoor and shortcuts and fixing things.
Are we delaying the inevitable brilliant next stage of existence? Are we in this life?
You mean that we
wake
up into something
else?
Maybe
something after this stage is way better. And that's the natural progress. The natural progress is to move from this to the next.
Well, that could only be the case if this is a dream. If this is a simulation and we're eventually waking up from the simulation, if this is a lucid dream, if this is limbo from Inception, you know, that you spend 80 years in limbo and you get old before you wake up and become a young man again. But if that's the case, great. Look, awesome. I fucking hope so, man. I'm just not fully convinced. So I'm going to fight for my survival as passionately as I can now, because I don't have the evidence that there's anything else.
So,
and with no evidence, it's pretty hopeless. The despair is pretty vivid.
It might be the big sleep.
Eternity on both ends. Why can't, you know, the universe is eternal. Why can't we be? That's my
question. Well, I think consciousness probably goes to sleep forever, but I think you become a part of, is it? Maybe consciousness is really a tool to create action. Maybe it's a tool to move things forward. Maybe
there's no doubt that it is, but it's a tool that found out that it enjoys its own. It wants to persist.
It likes blowjobs.
It enjoys itself. No, it enjoys
itself.
It likes
to get drunk.
We're self-referential. It's that recursive feedback loop. We know that we know that we know. And therefore, consciousness, if it was a fluke or if it was by like emergent design, it has decided that it likes itself.
Sure.
It likes... Like, you know, it likes free time. It likes to make art and sing songs. Not everything that it does is to build things and to be utilitarian and functional. Some things are pure pleasure.
The robots in Blade Runner.
The pleasure of being.
They like being alive as well.
There you go. So
that could be what it is, right?
Yeah.
Rutger Hauer, remember? He really liked it.
Yeah.
He was bummed out. Yeah.
Crazy.
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos who eat a flower that came from another planet. I'm telling you, man. Super intelligent kangaroos. Would that be the shit? If kangaroos start yelling at you for fucking polluting. Kangaroos start talking English like really quick within a couple of years.
And they wear Catholic schoolgirl
outfits.
You
know what's amazing about kangaroos is that they continue to raise. They have that thing, you know, the pouch where they put their little babies. But it's almost like when the baby's born, it's almost like not ready to be born. And so they keep them in there. And that's kind of like.
Well, they live in a terrible environment. Yeah. I mean, they have to protect that fucking thing.
It's kind of amazing.
They're living with these crocodiles everywhere.
Right.
Kangaroos are. That's a bad spot.
Yeah.
Australia's a shady fucking spot.
The most venomous snakes.
Oh, they got all kinds of shit that can kill you. And most of the country you can't live in. Most of the country nobody lives in. They live around the coast.
That's happening more and more. More and more people moving to cities, man. Most of the population lives in cities and will continue to live in cities.
They found a reef of ancient simple organism shit.
Yeah.
That is like some in 650 fucking million years old. Some insane. So it predated the idea of life on this planet, and they found it in Australia. Yeah, Australia is it's a crazy spot.
It would be fun to go. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been a few times. I've been to Sydney. Wow. Sydney twice. Great people. Really, nice people, man.
That's what I hear.
And they have no ozone over there, man. They got real cancer problems.
Right.
Like all over their billboards are these pictures. They have like these skin cancer campaigns. So there's photos of people with big, giant, stitched up scars.
Oh, bummer.
Talk about getting, because everyone's getting chunks taken out of them. Mm. Like you go out there in the sun with no sunscreen on, you get fucked up.
It's important to wear sunscreen.
Yeah, it's another level sun with no ozone layer. Wow. This giant hole in the ozone over there.
So long to get there, right? Like 17 hours or something?
Not quite. I think 15, something like that.
I want to go.
It's a lot.
I want to go.
But you know what? If you can deal with that just one day, I mean, you know, what you do is, man, get a bunch of podcasts, get a few movies on your iPad, and just zone out and just go zen and say, this is what I'm doing, and don't freak out and don't feel like, fuck, I got to get up, move around. Just deal with it. It ain't that big a deal.
Right.
And
right.
then once you get there, holy shit. It's a beautiful
there, it's
country, man.
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous. It's so amazing when you think that the people from England caused that, you know, as a prison colony at one point in time. You know, like what a silly idea.
Fascinating. Now all their actors win all the awards.
Yeah, I wonder why they're so good.
Yeah, Australian and British actors, man. They
make good
stand-ups,
too. There's a few, Jim Jefferies, really funny stand-up from Australia. Yeah, and there's a couple of Americans that do really well over there, like Eddie Ift and Arj Barker. They go over there, and Arj Barker is fucking enormous over there, apparently.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah, and they just, like, when I was in Australia, I was talking to people, like, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I'm a comedian. They're like, you know Arj Barker? Like, immediately.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome. It's so close. To like, it's nothing like America, but you could totally hang out there. Like, you could live there. Mm. Like, you wouldn't have to learn a language. People are very friendly. You'd have no problems.
So it feels slightly alternate universe.
Yes.
Because
very
it's like,
much so.
They speak English, but it's just another reality.
Well, it's so far away that they drive on the other side of the road.
Right.
That freaks you out.
Right. Totally.
That whole England thing is a trip.
Alice in Wonderland, man.
Yeah, it's like, why are you on this
That's
side?
That's why traveling is so cool, though, for shifting people's sense of, like, reality.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Expanding your consciousness because you're immersed in a sort of mirror world.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, most things are kind of the same, but they're a little off.
Yeah.
So it's like reality has shifted a little bit. I think that's what traveling is
Well, it's cool to see, like, a culture like Australia where, you know, socially, you know, is really kind of, like, parallel to America. Like, really similar. I mean, not exact, but really similar. Like, if you go over there and you meet an Australian guy who's your age, chances are you're going to have a lot of things to talk about in common. It won't be very, it'd be different, but not alien at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that is happening on the other side of the planet.
Right.
That there's like some sort of a, you
and
know,
you're
really
there, you're
modern
like,
civilization.
Yeah. And they're like, these people live here and they dream here and they wake up and they go to work.
Skyscrapers,
they've been living
nice
their
cars.
Entire lives with a whole different set of priorities that have no bearing on my existence and that I didn't know about until I came here.
And what really makes you trip out is when you watch their TV shows and they have like really popular TV shows you fucking never heard about.
Parallel world,
and a guy
man.
Comes out and a girl comes out. You know, who the fuck are these people?
Right.
Everybody goes crazy. It's the number one show in Australia, mate.
Right.
I can't believe they're really on right now.
Right.
And everybody will sit down and get drunk.
It's amazing. It gives you perspective also. Just
you know
unhinges you from your reality. Yeah. It unhinges you a little bit.
The one thing that I consistently get when I go to these places is how uptight America is. You know, when you go and you especially in Australia, they're so fun and they're so easy to hang out with and so generally friendly. It makes you feel like, what's responsible for this level of tension in America?
Yeah,
what
is responsible? I don't know.
It's not everywhere, by the way. Of course, there's a lot of cool people in America. Don't get me wrong. I get a lot of douchebag dummy tweets like, why don't you fucking go move to Afghanistan if you hate America? It's not that I hate America, stupid. It's that I love America and I think America should be awesome. I mean, it is awesome, but it should be better than what it is. It's possible for us to improve. And what holds us back is fuckheads like you. That's what holds us back.
Yeah, Twitter, we need to stop. There should be no reason why the cutting edge should be uptight about things, particularly like social issues. Like, we need to like completely legalize gay marriage everywhere. We need to legalize marijuana
everywhere. Well, you
need to debate
Rick Santorum because he disagrees. Rick Santorum did have a really interesting point, though, I got to admit. I mean, I am always 100% in support of gay marriage. I think you should be able to do whatever the fuck you want to do. It's not hurting me. It's not a scam, and it's not hurting me. It's not like you're trying to steal money, and it's not hurting me. So I'm completely in support of that, but he had a really interesting point, that Rick Santorum, because he was talking about marriage has always been, for over 1,000 years, been defined as a man and a woman. Now, all of a sudden, you're calling it marriage, but it's a man and a man. Can it be a man and two men? And I was like, oh, shit. Like, he just flipped it on its head. Like, he really did. It was a really good point. Because I was like, why can't it be two men?
Why can't
two men get married to a guy?
Why not?
Why can't everybody just bang each other?
Why not?
Yeah, but he was, and the women in the audience were saying, no, that's a different scenario. You're talking about a couple that's in love. And she's like, well, no, what if these people are all in love? There's three of them.
What if they are?
What if, you know, can it be two women and a man? Can it be two men and a woman? And then, you know, he just fucked them up, man. He just fucked them up. There's nothing they could say then. Because, you know, he's really right. Like, first of all, as a personal freedom issue, I feel like you should be able to do whatever you want if it's not hurting me. Clearly, gay marriage is not hurting me. So do whatever the fuck you want. But if you want to call it marriage, like, maybe they should call it, maybe it should be something different. Maybe it's marriage, but it's gay marriage. Oh, we're gay married? No. Like, me and my partner are gay married. You wouldn't be able to say regular married. Well, we're triple married. Oh, there's three of you? Yeah. We get together. I mean, what would you call that? If you made that legal, what would you call that?
Domestic partnership.
Yeah. They're all domestic partners.
Well, what if they want to call it married? This is my
call it whatever they want to.
But, you know, and then they get all the benefits of society and they want to, like, do tax stuff together and all those things that people want. Why not? Corporations can have like hundreds of employees or thousands of employees. Maybe marriages should be able to as well.
So 100,000 people in a marriage. So you're down with like...
They can be mini nation states
Mormon
of marriage
style, polygamy. I got a Time magazine.
Well, no. That's different because those are getting minors involved, right? And coercing people and imposing reality tunnels and closing access to other media. Like, it's different.
I got a Time magazine at home and there's a guy on the cover as one of those last holdout old man Mormon dudes who has a gang of wives. And he's still rocking it. It's one dude, 9 wives, and he's got 46 children. What the fuck?
He should be thrown in jail.
What the fuck, man?
Wow, that's not good.
Yeah, that's crazy. Did you know that a lot of those guys, we talked about this before. Who was it when we brought up this, that they went to Mexico, that a lot of Mormons were traveling to Mexico? And they were having problems with the cartels. They established these polygamous communities down in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And now they're having problems with the drug cartels. And someone was assassinated recently. Remember that?
Wow.
And I remember who brought it up. Yeah. One of our guests brought it up. And I'm like, wow, I had no idea that was even going down.
Right.
They've set up these alternative communities down in Mexico.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that? Like, what if somebody just decided to, like, turn Costa Rica into goddamn paradise? Everybody said,
they're trying to do it.
The world's all fucked up everywhere else, but here's the deal. We have a limited government. We're going to establish the best schools possible.
Libertarian utopia.
Social, you know, care possible, the best health care, the best community centers where we have people who are, you know, set up to take care of stray children and really create a society.
They're trying to do it.
Where?
There's a guy called Patry Friedman, who had this thing called the Seasteading Institute, which is an organization that, and they're backed by like Peter Thiel and everything.
Is that
and
the giant island?
Yeah, to make these artificial man-made islands where we can do practice runs of futuristic versions of governance and they can be in international waters. But now they're doing something with a Central American nation where the nation has given them a chunk of land to let them set up their own autonomous zone.
Where is it?
In Central America. I don't know if it was Nicaragua or Guatemala or one of those. But they're gonna try it. There's been all these articles about it, and they're gonna test out futuristic, cutting edge forms of government.
See, the only thing I worry about is one of the beautiful things about doing things in America, even though you're under the shadow of the military industrial complex, is that it's fairly safe.
Yes.
You know, it's fairly safe here.
Yes, yes,
and
very much.
You know, unless you're, I mean, where are you going to recreate that? Where are you going to recreate that? You're not going to do it in open waters. Because if you do it in international waters, what are these Somali pirate dudes? You hear about that shit every day.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? They got a bunch of peaceniks.
There's a lot to think about.
A floaty spot out there.
Yeah.
A big concrete floating jungle with what? Paul, the security guard who patrols the perimeter. They shoot Paul in the head. Fucking take over. God damn it. Jason Silva, you got to be ready for war.
Yeah, no. Listen, I mean, I think there's obviously logistical things that have to be addressed, but it's a very ambitious idea to begin with.
It's very ambitious. You would have to have guns. A moat.
They probably would.
You'd have to have laser beams, right?
Just get that trash pile and live in the middle of it.
That's not a bad idea.
No one wants to get near that thing.
Yeah, you hear people coming, too. But then where are you going to get your water from?
Your water? What do you mean? From the ocean?
Desalinization?
Of course.
It's going to be... Is that what they're trying to do?
Dean Kamen, who invented a lot of these water purification systems, man, that you can put in, like...
Urine.
Bacteria, infection, like poison almost into the water, and it comes out, like, ready to drink.
Wow.
And they have this new unit that they're going to be taking to, like, rural parts around the world... to these little villages, and that's like the number one cause of disease and illness in certain
right.
dirty water, right?
Right.
And these things, like, are these small little self-powered devices, and they last forever. And it's like Dean Kamen and his water products, water filtration stuff. People should Google. He's a genius. No, he already has like this new design.
I was going to say how far are they on the island thing, the artificial island?
I don't know. I think funding. They need funding to build it.
Of course. Who the hell's going to pay for that? Like, bitch, what?
Well,
like,
they just have techno-philanthropists, new internet age billionaires. They have the resources.
Yeah, it would have to be a lot of money. How much would it cost to build a fake island?
I have no idea.
Probably a lot of fucking money, man.
Probably a lot of money.
I was watching a documentary on the Japanese airport that they had created, and that is it's on an artificial island.
Uh-huh.
And an artificial island that they've created, but they're slowly sinking into the sea. So they have this elaborate system of lifts that as it sinks, they raise it up to keep it level.
Wow.
It's fucking nuts. I mean, what a marvel of engineering. You know,
it's just magnificent when you think about it. It's
incredible.
I mean, love looking at engineering in nature and comparing it to engineering made by man, and you see how there's certain patterns that align.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Here we are. We're like, oh, you know, we thought of this. But then it's like, oh, but it matches this pattern that nature came up with, too.
Yeah.
And what you realize is that a good idea is a good idea, whether you came up with it blindly, like nature, or whether you came up with it consciously, like man.
Right.
A good idea is a good idea.
Right.
If it works, it works. That's what's amazing.
Have you ever seen when they take a colony of leafcutter ants and they expose their entire underground structure by filling it with cement?
Technology, man.
Holy
they have their own technology.
Shit.
That's their extended phenotype, man.
It's really kind of a fucking disturbing thing to watch, though, because it's kind of ant genocide you're, like, looking at. I mean, they eventually cemented everybody in there.
It is very sad.
I mean, I don't really give a fuck about ants, but it's kind of crazy that they're willing to just cement the shit out of their houses just to find out how big the house is.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, folks, just Google it. What is it, Brian? Leafcutter ants? Just pull that video up because it's astounding to look at. Just pull up leafcutter ant colony exposed. And these scientists, they found out that not only do they have these intricate structures, but they have vents set up so where they bring in like funguses and things that are rotting.
Yeah.
There's an ability for the fucking the gases to rise out through the air,
It's
so it
insane.
Doesn't pollute their little tunnels.
There's so much emergent
amazing.
Intelligence in the design, but do you know what the most amazing part is? There's no one in control.
Yeah,
it's all decentralized. It's all a bunch of individual local interactions happening simultaneously that together exhibit emergent phenomenon and emergent complexity.
It's
like a
beehive. Occupy Wall Street.
Beehives exhibit self-organization that emerges when all these billions of bees are working together to create this intelligent behavior. But no individual bee itself is intelligent.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now they're saying that our neurons are the same, that we're not like a singular consciousness, but billions of non-intelligent neurons that together create synchronous, like transcendent effects. That consciousness emerges from the interactions of trillions of neurons, individual local relationships happening in different parts of the brain. And
that
together,
totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our brains are like ant colonies. Our neurons are like the ants in the ant colony. And then us is the emergent behavior. It's what comes out.
Yeah, I've always said that it's ridiculous to think that human beings can ever be separate, because that's the worst thing they could do to you in prison.
Yeah.
The worst thing they could do to you in prison is separate you from the general population and put you in solitary.
Yeah.
Nobody can talk to you. Yeah. You're just by yourself. And that's crazy for people. Yeah.
Well, that's like cutting your arm off.
Yes. It's alien to our goal and purpose and our desires on Earth.
100%.
Yeah. So it's obvious that we are engineered for a reason, or at least
for feedback.
Yeah.
For interaction.
Yes.
Interaction and feedback. Yeah. Everything is feedback loops, dude. Everything. Yeah.
Well, that's why these kind of conversations are so exciting.
Yes. Exactly.
Because you turn my brain into an area that it, you know, might not have gone into.
Likewise.
You know? And then we start expanding in that area.
Yeah, there's a book by Matt Ridley called The Rational Optimist, and he coined the word idea sex. And he says that ideas coming together in open liquid networks, open channels of communications, are akin to genetic recombination in nature. It's genes being in the primordial soup, mixing and completing each other and interacting. And
it's all a giant algorithm,
this happening
right?
with ideas. Yeah. Ideas are intermingling and having sex with one another, but they're creating more change and at a rate that is unheard of by the gene pool.
If we could look at the interactions of human behavior and thought and language, if we could look at all that stuff as like numbers and look at it as like energy and something that could be quantified, instead of looking at it as our own product, and instead of looking at it as something that we have done, if we could just look at it entirely of its own, we would see a completely different picture, wouldn't we?
Well, if we take the long view.
Yeah, we're a caterpillar, man. We're a caterpillar about to become a butterfly.
Absolutely,
that's what we're doing.
Dude.
We're making some crazy fucking cocoon right now. We don't even know what we're doing. We're just
transform everything, man.
And we're just buying
and we know it's
iPad
possible
because
the caterpillars did it.
Yeah.
Caterpillars do it. So, you know, it exists. It does. It's not beyond the laws of physics for completely have radical self-transformation.
You fucking blew my mind again, man. Hey, guys.
You blew everybody's mind again. Podcast. Essentially, I gotta think we should stop it right there because that's about 3 hours.
Oh, that
three
was
hours
magnificent,
of craziness.
Man.
Wasn't it about 3 hours somewhere in there?
Yeah,
two hours, 40 minutes, something like that.
Thanks again, brother.
Dude, thank you, man. You're so very, awesome. Very stimulating to talk to.
Thanks,
yeah.
My
it's
friend.
One of those.
So are you? So are you guys?
We have these conversations, and it just you know, you walk out and drive home, just going, "What the fuck, man?"
Thanks for having me, man.
What is next?
Yeah, well.
No, you're so awesome at like. Passionately infusing these ideas in other people's heads.
Thanks, brother.
You know, you have like a way of, you know, like when you get fired up about shit, like everybody around you is like, oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it's,
dude. Thanks, man.
It's infectious. Very infectious.
Thanks, brother.
And if people want to find you on Twitter, it's Jason_Silva. If they want to find you online, it is...
This is JasonSilva.com.
And all of his upcoming lectures and all... Is there anything that people can see? Like, are there any places where the average person can go and buy a ticket and watch you perform live?
The Economist Ideas Festival happening in Berkeley on March 28th is on innovation. And people can Google Economist Ideas Festival.
Yeah, anyone can go to that.
You can buy tickets for that. And,
so you don't have to work at Google.
Yes, and on April 20th, when I speak at the National Arts Club, they have a website. You should be able to look it up. I think it's about like Dreaming Unlimited or something like that.
And
in,
all
in New York
this
City.
Information is on thisisjasonsilva.com? Or
yeah, and I tweet
Twitter.
About it all the Twitter. Time as the talks come up. The PSFK conference in New York at Battery Park on March 30th, you can buy tickets to. I'm going to be speaking at University of Pennsylvania April 2nd, actually.
Beautiful.
That's going to be fun. This class on psychedelics and visionary art and stuff.
Dude, keep doing what you're doing.
I
love
brother.
It. It's very exciting.
Thanks,
thank you,
man.
Everybody, for tuning into the podcast. Thanks for all the positive tweets and messages, and we love you, too. Thanks for everybody who already bought tickets for Atlanta April 20th. It is the first show is pretty much sold out. It will be when I record my next special. So if you want to go, there will be tickets to the second show that will be available sometime this week. Like I said, probably somewhere around Wednesday, and I got a lot of other shit going on in the future too. Louisville, Kentucky, that's soon. When is that, Brian? Any ideas?
Louisville, Kentucky.
January, March 30th through April 1st is Louisville, Kentucky, and then we're in Hermosa Beach is actually before that. March 23rd and 24th at Hermosa Beach, the Comedy Magic Club, one of my favorite clubs ever, and then 420 in Atlanta. 420 is when I'm going to do my special. It's so cliche.
Bro.
It's so cliche as a corny pothead, I couldn't resist. Thank you to the Fleshlight for tuning in and saving our souls with their plastic vagina. Does that work? No. I need to come up with a new commercial. Thank you to the Fleshlight for being there for lonely boys.
For being easy.
Thank you for being, but not that easy to clean. A little complicated.
No, it's not. It's
a little
super
bit.
Easy.
It's, yeah, you gotta, it should, at the end of it, should be like a garbage disposal. It just eats loads and then turns it into love and sends it out through the universe.
It's really easy if you like to suck your own cum out of it.
So, Brian, so not necessary. Jason Silva's here. He's a serious man. You don't need to do that in front of him. You fucking freak. Thank you to Onnit.com. O-N-N-I-T. Oh, yeah. Oh, what did I say? Fleshlight. Enter in the code Nate Rogan. 15% off. You already know that. You heard the first half of this fucking podcast. Go to Onnit.com. Enter in the code Nate Rogan. Save 10%. There, it's over. It's done. Tomorrow, we have Aubrey Mike Marcus, formerly known as the artist, formerly known as Chris, who's our friend who changed his fucking name. That's how hard he tripped.
Wow.
He went to Peru and did ayahuasca and changed his fucking name.
You know, I have a friend who did that too. My friend Lion, actually.
Yeah, that ayahuasca. Okay, fuck you up, son. Wow. And Aubrey just got back from Costa Rica where he went through a series of ibogaine experiences.
And now his name is Optimus Prime.
Yeah, now he's Mr. Manhattan. And we're going to meet him tomorrow and he's going to explain to us what the fuck is really going on with this crazy universe we're living. Everything that has not been covered today will be covered tomorrow. And then on Wednesday we get Matt from Hoarders, is Clutter Cleaner on Twitter, and he's the guy who cleans up the crazy people's houses, and I'm really fascinated by that because I got a bit of a hoarder in me. Just a pinch. You do as well.
Yeah.
So we'll find out what that fucking psychosis is all about. Jason Silva, you are the man, sir.
You are the man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody.
Namaste.
We love you, dirty bitches. Oh, two shows this weekend in Pasadena.
Yeah.
Because I'm gearing up for my special freaks. So this Friday and Saturday. Friday night, when are we doing it?
Friday, 9 o'clock, Saturday, 10:30, IceHouseComedy.com.
Yes, and it's the Annex. It's a small room. It always sells out in advance, so if you want to get on the shit, IceHouseComedy.com, is that it? Yeah, one Friday at 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock
Friday. 9 o'clock Friday, 10:30 on Saturday. That's it. It's over.
Nice.
God bless America. Jihad.